in our committee. For those who haven't been here before, please turn off all your cell phones, PDAs, any electronic device that makes noise. Even if it's on vibrate, it will cause the microphones to make noise. And if you rudely interrupt someone with your cell phone going off, I'll ask you to make a contribution to the Common School Fund, which helps fund education in our state.
Oh.
And there's the cell phone. So you have your moment right now. We are going to take a bill and spend about 2 or 3 minutes on it and then move it out, and then we'll get involved in the Matolius hearing. And so I'll talk to you about the rules around that as soon as we're done. So I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 378. Mr. Hendricks, are you here? We have a dash 4 amendment. Would you like him just to explain it?
Whatever you'd like.
Okay. Okay, colleagues, we had this amendment, this bill this morning. Mr. Hendricks, what happened between now and then on this changed amendment?
Chair Walker, members of the committee, Dave Hendricks, Legislative Council's office. You have the new and improved amendments to Senate Bill 378. They now basically, I described the effect of the bill and the amendments this morning with respect to laws that are generally applicable to public bodies, and up until the passage of this bill did not apply to OHSU, laws generally applicable to public bodies. What these amendments now do is make it clear that this change that the bill makes will take effect for laws enacted on or after January 1st, 2008. Consequently, the status quo remains the same for this session, but starting in next year and subsequent sessions, when laws are passed that talk about public bodies generally, they will also encompass the Oregon Health Sciences University.
Great. Thank you. And we made it 2008, because if it had been 2007, they would have had to go back and review all these bills this session, and that would have created a problem. At least that's what I was told by OHSU this morning. All right. Any questions of Mr. Hendricks? Gee, I thank you so much for being here.
You're welcome. Chair.
Yes.
I move the dash 4 amendment to Senate Bill 378.
Okay. Senator Cruz moves the dash 4 amendment to Senate Bill 378. Any conversation about that? Any objection? Hearing none, so ordered.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 378 as amended to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves Senate Bill 378 as amended to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation. Any other comments or discussion? Hearing none. Oh, Ms. Gravel, it's your job to take through the roll. Excuse for the moment.
Senator Moore.
Aye.
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 You had to think about it?
No, we're off kilter, and we're all going to shift down one because I'm off one, and it's bugging me. So 378 passes. I'll carry it because nobody else understands it. So can we shift one? The chair position is in the wrong spot. I'm going
to
be in the middle.
Do I need to move? Is Senator Metzger coming?
I've often wondered, Senator Walker, why I'm to the left of you.
Me too, Senator Cruz. Me too. Oh, that feels better. We're in a different configuration anyway.
Plus when you stay down there. So.
Okay. All right.
Dory.
So I will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 30. There are sign-up sheets on the table over there, and we're going to take people first who signed up last time and did not get to speak, and I think you have delineated that for me, cross-checked it. And then I also have someone here with an infant, so we'll be taking them first. How I'm going to work this is the committee administrator is going to talk to us about the amendments. Then Senator Westlin and I will go down to the witness table, and we will discuss those amendments. And then as you testify today, those are what you are going to be testifying to, because Senate Bill 30 in its state at this moment is not going forward because Senator Westlin has a change to his own bill, and I have some changes that came out of the work group that I was in. So all of those have to be voted on by the committee after we hear public testimony. So Ms. Richardson, and I see Ms. Burdick, Senator Burdick is here after Senator Westlin and I speak, and I'll take you so you can go about your... Are you in committee this evening? Okay. Ms. Richardson, tell us what's going on, and if Ms. Gravel could turn on the overhead.
It's on. Just a matter of flipping on the light.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 30 prohibits destination resort siting within 3 miles of the Tulares River Basin. Applies to lands mapped as eligible for destination resort siting on or after December 25th, 2006. Declares an emergency and would take effect upon passage. We have 8 sets of amendments before us, and shall I just go through them?
Sure.
Okay. The -2 amendments prohibit destination resort siting in the Metolius River Basin as opposed to the bill itself, which has a 3-mile radius around the basin. It allows the Jefferson County to amend the map adopted as part of the county's comprehensive plan after December 1st, 2006 and before January 1st, 2007. The -3 amendments allow Jefferson County to amend the map adopted as the amendment to the county's comprehensive plan after December 1st, 2006 and before January 1st, 2007. The -4 amendments prohibit destination resort siting in the Metolius River Basin and within 3 miles of the basin if located within Jefferson County on land not owned by a federally recognized Indian tribe and west of the southwest Grand View Loop Road. The -5s are the same as the -3s. If I can just say that.
There you go.
-7 amendments permit Jefferson County to approve siting of destination resort based on comprehensive plan amendments acknowledged on or after December 25th, 2006. Mm-hmm. Restricts the approved destination resort to 3,500 acres on land located west of National Forest Road 11. It limits resort residential development to 2,500 units and specifies number of individually owned or for overnight lodging. It prohibits more than 2 golf courses on the resort, requires a donation of at least 1,400 acres surrounding Fly Creek, a conservation easement to protect 21,000 acres in vicinity of approved site for sustained yield timber operations, and a $400,000 endowment fund for management of the donated land and the conservation easement. That's your -7s. Your -8s prohibit destination resort siting within 3 miles of the Metolius River Basin and west of Green Ridge Crest. The -9 amendments permit approval of destination resort siting west of Green Ridge Crest if it's within 3 miles of the basin, it's 640 acres or less, and it has fewer than 200 individually owned units. It exempts resort overnight lodging units from the requirement to be constructed or bonded within 10 years of initial sales. Lastly, the -10s before us. Changes in original bill apply to lands mapped as eligible for destination resort siting on or after December 25, 2006, and do not create a basis for compensation under ORS 197352.
Okay, thank you. Senator Wetzel, if you and I will take our stations here at the witness table, I'll turn the gavel over to Senator Cruz. And basically, There are a number of amendments. Some of them are just little tiny things that we will talk about later in the evening. But basically, there are 4 options on the table here, and we will lay those out when we take the table. You want to put them up or you want me to?
Yeah.
You can.
Yeah.
Oh, you know it's a mistake, too.
You mean this?
No. Come in, Bill.
Senator Morris, you know, I've got the governor. We could just adjourn and go home.
I think that's a big one.
Yeah. Let's lower the lights a tiny bit. Might cool it down in here as well. Okay. Mr. Chair, Vicki Walker, State Senator, District 7. And let me say that I had 2 lengthy work groups on this matter. That's a little too low for the lights. We could go up a little bit more. You don't know how to adjust it? Because I don't want to be in the dark all night. These on the screen are the amendments that came out of that. I don't know how to focus these. It doesn't really let you zoom in and out, but that's probably the clearest that
okay.
We're going to get the words.
Okay.
So we had 2 work group meetings. The last one was, oh my, it went from about 5:30 in the evening to 11:30 at night. What you see before you are some of the ideas that came out of the work group. We could not come to resolution, which was a disappointment for me because I really like to resolve things. So that's why we've left it up to the committee. Senator Wesson will address his dash fours in a moment. I will start out with the dash sevens. The dash seven allows the Ponderosa Land and Cattle Company to site their destination resort off the Metolius. It's really not on the river. It's east of Green Ridge, with the following conditions. The destination resort site must not exceed 3,500 acres, and it must be located east of National Forest Road 11. That was the dividing line that everyone seemed to be able to work with when we were in the work group. The residential development cannot exceed 2,500 units, and that's 2,350 houses, and this is a maximum. This is not a minimum. This is a maximum. And 150 overnight lodging units. No more than two golf courses. Approximately 1,400 acres will be... That was interesting. Sounds like we have a bird in the system. Approximately 1,400 acres surrounding Fly Creek must be donated to a nonprofit Metolius Basin Conservation Organization. And I'll put a map up here in a moment. $400,000 will be provided as an endowment to that organization for the donated land and the conservation easement. And that conservation easement will be recorded to protect at least 21,000 acres of the forested land around the resort for perpetual sustainable yield timber harvest, and that harvest will be limited to trees under 20 inches in diameter. The Forest Service currently has, I think, a 21-inch diameter limit, so these folks are going even below that. So those are the things they talked about in their proposal, and I added the money part.
Senator Walker, yes. How do you define sustainable yield? Is that based on the Oregon Forest Practices Act standard, or
that, Mr. Chair, that is not defined in the bill, but that would be my assumption. The Dash 8 amendments would allow no destination resort to be sited in the Metolius River Basin west of the crest of Green Ridge. So that basically eliminates the Dutch Pacific parcel. They would not be allowed to site their resort. The Dash 9 amendments would allow the siting of the Dutch Pacific parcel, limiting it to no more than 640 acres, so if they wanted to buy more acreage and add it to the resort, they could not. And it may be sited in the basin, of course, and the resort does not have to conform with ORS 197.445-4BB, which is the 2-to-1 housing ratio. Also in that description is, I believe, they're limited to 200 houses. The Dash 7 amendments could be combined with the Dash 8 or 9, and that's the way they were drafted. So if you all feel like there should be one or both resorts, you can do as you please. So I can show you the map. This is only one map that I was showing at the hearing. There were many. And that, members of the committee, will show you the parcels. We're talking about the Colson parcel here, which is the Ponderosa Land and Cattle Company. That's actually a pretty big piece of land. It's 26,000 acres, I believe, and only 10,000 of it had been mapped by the county for the resort. And the Dash 7 amendment scaled them back to 3,500 acres. And all the land around here would be in the conservation easement. Up here is, if I can see it on this, the Fly Creek drainage is up here in the northern part of the property. That would be given to an easement or to a conservation group, and they would give a $400,000 endowment for that. Over here, and this is Green Ridge. This is the dividing line. I went out to the Metolius myself. I'd never been there before, so I flew over it to get an idea of what it looked like. It is quite beautiful, and the Green Ridge is the dividing line, basically, and the river's down at the bottom, and Camp Sherman's the little town right there that's been there for a number of years. The head of the Metolius, of course, is here. And it was rather interesting because I expected to hear roaring rapids when I went up there, and it's very quiet because they just come up out of the ground. That's why people are so keyed up about this proposal. Then, of course, the Dutch Pacific parcels over here. I'm trying to think how long it took us by car to get there. Not very long, about 10 or 15 minutes. And it's so close to Subtle Lake, and it's just kind of out there. But it is in the drainage, and it's surrounded by wilderness, the Mount Jefferson Wilderness. So that's why people are keyed up about this one, because it's right in the basin. They're keyed up about this one as well, but there's some movement by the Friends of the Metolius to accept some sort of development. At least I got a letter from them indicating that they would accept some sort of development with these parameters that I didn't exactly draft the amendment to meet exactly their parameters, but I put together what I thought was doable. So that's sort of the proposals we're looking at this evening, and that's... I'll turn it over to Senator Westland to tell you how he would like to change Senate Bill 30 to suit his purposes.
Before you do, Senator Westland, Senator Walker, I was handed a note that says in the dash sevens, you say west of the National Forest Road 11, and if you were wanting the Colson development, it should be east.
It should say east. It does in my... cheat sheet here that I had on the board.
On this it says west.
Oh, it sure does. Well, if we pass that amendment tonight, we will do a conceptual amendment because you're exactly right. So thank you, Senator Cruz. We just got these amendments back late this afternoon and did not have time to review them in detail, and that's a serious error, and that would be corrected with a conceptual amendment. Okay.
Senator Westland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My amendment to my own bill is really quite simple.
Senator Westland, who are you? I know you're new, but...
I'm Senator Ben Westland, District 27.
Well, nice to meet you.
Thank you, sir. Yeah, let's see if this map can go up.
Pretty good.
You can zoom out if it's too close.
That captures the spirit of what I'm trying to achieve with these amendments. They're really quite simple. The solid black line in the most outer perimeter is the original 3-mile boundary around the Metolius River Basin that was originally proposed in Senate Bill 37.
30.
Land use on my mind. The yellow line is what's proposed in the dash 4 amendments. So we bring the exemption area in to the Metolius Basin with the exception of roughly the southeast corner where we come up and go down the Deschutes-Jefferson County line, head further east, and I'm sorry I don't know the name of that road, and then we go back up to join the actual basin boundary. If you could point to that area, Vicki, with your...
Right here.
No.
Where are you going?
Right there.
Okay.
And quite simply, the purpose of that reflects the original spirit and intention of the bill, prohibiting any destination resorts in an area that will most likely, the problem is nobody knows, have an impact on the headwaters and indeed the entire Metolius River Basin. That is the spirit of the original bill. That is certainly the spirit of my dash 4 amendments.
Okay. And Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I would also indicate there was a lot of research that went into these work groups. I spent many hours doing research, and we had a Forest Service person come over and participate. The tribes were there, or at least one tribe, the Warm Springs. And we did determine, and I've verified this with ODF&W, that the location of the of the Colson property, which is here, the land that was mapped for a destination resort does not include winter grazing range for big game, because that would have not been appropriate to site that there. But the there is deer and elk and big game that go all through here. The tribe has their reservation up here, way up at the top, and it covers a significant piece of land, I think all the way up to the Columbia Gorge. And they indicated in the hearings that the elk and the deer roam pretty frequently up through here. So this is, the Dutch Pacific property is a summer grazing ground, but it is not winter grazing land there. And as Senator Westland indicated, the water is an issue for many people, and they'll talk about that tonight because these springs, as I said, just come up out of the ground, and no one really knows where they come from. But they're there, and they produce this very beautiful river. And so the question is what to do about people who own private property within that basin.
Senator Westland, you had mentioned to me that the threes and fours were yours. Are the fours the only ones you want to consider?
The threes allow, when we pass this bill out tonight, the threes allow Jefferson County to go back and remap immediately. Currently, after you've mapped, there's a prohibition of some fairly length of time. I don't know the specific amount of time, but when we pass this bill out tonight, this allows Jefferson County to go back and do another destination resort mapping process.
So with the assumption that we adopt your fours, the threes would also be necessary, but not necessarily with the sevens? Or would they be necessary in all cases?
They would be, Mr. Chair, they would be necessary in all cases, and that's why you have an identical amendment.
Okay.
I think it's the dash five, because
right.
I wasn't sure what Senator Westland was going to present. And that would be needed in all cases, because if you do not do that, there's a limitation on when the county can go back and remap, a very long period of time, actually. I think it's 30 months or something like that. So we have to give them permission to go back and remap.
Okay. Any questions, Senator Morris?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Who you referenced the work group, Senator Walker. Who was in that work group?
So, Mr. Chair and Senator Morris, the Warm Springs were represented at both work groups. The proponents, the second work group had quite a few folks there for each side. So the proponents were represented, folks from the Colsons and the Dutch Pacific parcel, and they had lawyers there at the second work group, because I indicated that people needed to come prepared to authorize any kind of settlement. So they brought their lawyers in tow. The county was represented by their county council, Mr. David Allen, and there were a couple of lobbyists in the room representing various interests. Ms. Patty Johnson was represented by Jim Marquis, and Linda Swearingen was there representing, as a I believe, in a lobbyist capacity with Rick Allen and Mr. Colson, Mr. Colson's lawyer, and then also Shane Lundgren and Jim Keene and their lawyer, and I think there might have been another lawyer or two, but pretty much the parties who were affected here. And the county was certainly involved and actually participated in a positive manner. At least their county council did.
Mm-hmm. There's a follow-up.
Sure.
And then if you were to characterize the dash sevens, did that represent a consensus within that group? Or
well,
give us some appreciation for how this has emerged and...
Okay, I can do that, Mr. Chair and Senator Morris. These came out of the last work group, where I asked everybody to come prepared to settle and to bring their food and drink, because I wasn't going to let them go until we did. And Senator Westland and I, we would take down information, and then we'd take a recess and let everybody process it and come back with a better offer. And then we'd come back in the room, and they would present a better offer. And this represented, it's pretty similar to their final offer, though I gave everyone at the end of the night after when we left at 11 or 11:30, I said I want all final offers delivered to my office on Thursday. So this was on a Tuesday. So Thursday by noon, they came back with their final offers. And this kind of pretty much represents the Ponderosa offer, though we added the money piece. I added the $400,000. The Friends of the Metolius had asked for $750,000, and I thought that was a stretch. So I just basically cut the baby on that one. And that's pretty much, I think, the same. They came down in the number of houses a bit. The reason they want the acreage, they didn't feel they could come down in the acreage anymore because then they would have tremendous density. And their argument was that they wanted the acreage so that they could spread the homes out and it wouldn't be so dense. There was also discussion that, you know, of course, they want two golf courses. There's also discussion about there are now many golf courses use gray water to water their golf courses. So all of the toilet water and that kind of water, once it's cleaned up, it can go out and be used on the golf course. So you're not using all this water for all of those needs. You're actually utilizing some water that would be of no use once it's been used as gray water. I can't say that the Dutch Pacific folks worked out, got quite as good a deal as they had asked for. I don't have my file with me, but they wanted 200 home sites. They limited to 200 home sites. We brought them down quite a bit in their home sites, but they also wanted to only pay in $25,000 per home. And under the statute, the destination resort statute, it was $7 million when the statute was passed, and then with the Consumer Price Index and moving along with inflation, it's up to about a little over $9 million. And so they didn't want to put in that much. At least that was their proposal that came back to me, and I felt that they should. So I left that alone so they get no break in terms of putting in less dollars. But they do get their resort under the Dash 9, which, under the destination resort statute, you have to have a 2-to-1 ratio of homes and hotel units, overnight lodging units. And so they did not want to have that huge of a density either. So that's why we said they would not have to subscribe to that section of the statute. Any other questions? I hope I didn't mess anything up, but they can testify and correct me if I did.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Wesley.
Thank you. For the record, I'd like to make a few observations of my own. First of all, I would like to thank and compliment all parties that participated in these work groups, and perhaps most especially Chair Walker. These represented a tremendous amount of work on her and everybody's part and were difficult endeavors. As you might imagine, this very charged issue, bringing the parties into the room, I think took some courage in and of itself, not only for the chair to call them, but for the participants to involve themselves with, I think, the level of integrity and forthrightness that they did. So I was very pleased to be a party to those discussions. But I would also like to point out that at the end of both of those work groups, Chair Walker accurately ended both meetings with a comment that Senator Westland, I think, still just wants to run the original bill, which, with the minor modifications I have presented in the Dash 4s, is certainly true. I also want to comment on a fairly recent development that I think highlights the need for protecting this unique and special place. I believe it was last Saturday that the Black Butte, located just to the south of the headwaters, the Black Butte Homeowners Association voted on a split vote to ask their members if they wanted to expand the property, the resort, double it in size, as a matter of fact, to, I believe, another 1,800 home sites. Not only do I believe that highlights the need for these protections, but it also points out something that I think is a very important issue and distinction. Number one, it's only the homeowners association that has voted to ask the homeowners. Having lived in that area for a number of years, I am not certain what the homeowners will do. I have a feeling that there's not a great deal of appetite by the homeowners to do that. Maybe wrong, I just don't know. That's a personal opinion at this juncture. But it also highlights the special status of Black Butte, which indeed in and of itself is not a destination resort because it was created before Senate Bill 100 and is, as it currently stands, exempt from Goal 8. But if they proceed, they will have a most difficult time because they will have to get a Goal 8 exemption, not meet the criteria of Goal 8. And Deschutes County, I think, wisely does not cite destination resorts in forest land. So I say that to highlight the pressure for development in the area and the crying need to protect this most special and unique place.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I did, as Senator Weston was speaking, I did want to mention also Senator Morris in response. That's, I don't have my notes with me. I lose thoughts, track my thoughts sometimes. But we had also the Friends of the Metolius were represented at the work groups, and also Central Oregon Land Watch. And it was actually the Friends of the Metolius who offered up the suggestion that some of the, well, the Colson folks offered up some of the Fly Creek property as to be put in a conservation easement. The Friends objected to the conservation easement for that property, saying that back east that folks have been suing over conservation easements, so I suggested that the land be outright donated, and they agreed to that. And I think that's pretty uncommon, unprecedented with a destination resort to do a land donation like that. They also, when they agreed to the conservation easement, they're giving up several million board feet of timber in doing that conservation easement and the sustainable timber forestry. So I just felt there was quite a bit of movement, and the Dutch Pacific parcel was much smaller, so there wasn't much movement they could do, but they did indicate they wanted to put a lot of money into upgrading the environment around the Metolius Basin, which they felt had been degraded over time. So that's where we're at, and I think with that, Senator Weston and I will be quiet, and we'll move back up and let some folks have a chance to say something, unless you have any other questions. Okay.
Yeah, Senator Burdick's still here.
Okay, well, we'll let her come back. And Ms. Wood, I know you're the one with the infant, so we'll go ahead and hear from you first, and Senator Burdick's going to have to wait.
I think Senator Burdick's got the infant, doesn't he?
Well, she made me change the diaper.
Oh, okay.
I wish she did have the infant. Senators, thank you. My name is Mary Christina Wood. Can you hear me all right?
I can hear you great. Okay. And let me remind you all, you do not have to speak real close to the microphone because it actually vibrates. So if you just at a comfortable distance, that's fine. Works great.
Wonderful. I came to testify in support of SB 30. I frankly don't understand all of the amendments, so I apologize for not being able to keep up with the detail. My fear in the amendments is that my reaction is that though the work groups tried very hard to accomplish some sort of compromise, compromise is not the objective with respect to the Metolius River Basin, as I hope my testimony will explain. I fear that giving a little bit here and a little bit there, avoiding deer habitat here and some aquifer recharge zones here, and involving the public at endless points down the process will actually compromise the Metolius River Basin as much as if you just allowed all of the development right now. Let me get to the heart of the matter, Senators. If there's one way of describing the Metolius River, it is a quiet, peaceful, timeless river that runs like a thread through generations of Oregonians and back to time immemorial for Native people of the basin. When a river provides that kind of quiet solitude that the Metolius has for literally eons, it becomes sacred. I come before you this evening as a fourth generation on the Metolius River with ties to this river on both sides of my family. And I bring my son Sage and my baby Nicholas as representatives of a fifth generation on the river. My grandfather, General Lamar II Sr., with his wife Marie, bought a cabin in Camp Sherman in 1946. My other grandfather, Erskine Wood, bought property along the Metolius in 1918 and built a small camp with four open little huts, a one-room log cabin, an open cookhouse, and a little fire pit. Today, the Wood camp looks exactly as it did in 1918. My siblings and I donated 30 acres of meadow and islands in the river to the Nature Conservancy, and not in trade for any development. Aside from the landowners in the basin, families across Oregon take comfort in knowing that the Metolius today is still much like it was when their parents or grandparents first experienced it. You can't say that about many places anymore. My little children walk and fish along the banks just as I did. Around the campfire, we talk about our ancestors as if they were right there with us. There is a strengthening, eternal pulse to the Metolius that I fear would be ruined by any of these developments or any part of these developments. Our family tells the story of General George C. Marshall, Army Chief of Staff to President Roosevelt during World War II. Marshall was a close friend of my grandfather, and during the anxious weeks that led up to D-Day, General Marshall asked my grandfather to bring him to the Wood camp for a few days. He explained why only much later. He had sought out the quiet waters of the Metolius to gain courage and fortitude for what this nation was about to face. On June 6, 1944, when our American troops landed on the shores of Normandy to beat back that Nazi tide that was rolling across Europe, the waters of the Metolius gave grounding and conviction to this country's highest commander. A professor from Boston wrote in yesterday describing the Metolius as an unspeakably beautiful river, unique, more intimate, and calming than any other I've ever known. It should not surprise you that many Oregon families, including my own, have buried or scattered the ashes of their loved ones across the Metolius Basin. It is one of the only places left where one can be amidst the lasting peace of nature. And so, Senators, when I'm asked to testify on these proposals for destination resorts that would bring homes and roads and golf courses and crowds of people to this basin, you might as well ask my opinion on child abuse or robbery. These proposals shock the conscience. They are the work of predatory developers driven by vicious greed to annihilate the quietude of the Metolius Basin. If these are strong words, I'm sorry, but you will probably hear many strong words from the citizens of Oregon tonight, because the Metolius is inseparable from the memory of loved ones who have sat on its banks through time. The citizens of Oregon will fight for the Metolius until we secure its safety forever, because its waters carry our children's legacy. The proposed legislation, SB 30, is not about private property. It's about public property. The people of Oregon own the river, the air, the wildlife, and the forest that are threatened with these resort proposals. The developers' private property rights do not overcome the legislature's responsibility to protect legacy public resources. As the Supreme Court said in 1907 and repeated just 2 weeks ago, quote, the state has an interest independent of and behind the titles of its citizens and all the earth and air within its domain. It has the last word as to whether its mountains shall be stripped of their forests and its inhabitants shall breathe pure air. I brought my son, Sage, here to testify tonight. He sees nature being destroyed all around him. There are few things more disheartening and depressing to a little boy than to bear witness to such desecration. He asked me, why is government allowing this? Is there any end to it? Why won't I be able to enjoy the nature that you had growing up? The only thing I keep saying to him is that government does have the obligation to protect places like the Metolius and its full surrounding basin for the people forever, and the government has gone far astray, but there will be those heroes, like the sponsors of SB 30, joined by every other senator and representative in the Oregon legislature, I hope, who will have the courage in their hearts to do what is right towards our descendants and not give away public treasures like the Metolius Basin to people like the Lundgrens and the Colsons, who would line their pockets by stealing what is most precious from the generations following us. I would like to leave you with a few lines from a poem that my great-grandfather, Charles Erskine Scott Wood, wrote in 1921 as he was sitting on the banks of the Metolius River at our camp. He was about 7 years old when he wrote this poem. He was a lawyer and an author. And he loved the river and bequeathed it poetically to future generations. We read this poem as we laid my father's ashes to rest on the banks of the Metolius. I, Charles Erskine Scott Wood, make now my last sure will and testament for those grandchildren who share with me this solitude and whom I must too shortly leave. To my grandchildren, I give all the trout in the Metolius. I give them mornings on the river bank, song of the river when the new sun shines, and the solemn discourse of the pines. At evening when the melting shadows fall and peace sits on the bank with folded wings, the birds all offering a good night call, and deep in dusk a yellow warbler sings, the river is for your delight. Senators, if your great-grandchildren can wake up on the banks of the Metolius River 100 years from now, and there are still fish in the waters, tall standing pines leaning in the breeze, quiet all around, and none of the developments proposed tonight, we will know that you, and they will know, that you personally secured their precious Metolius endowment for them to also hand down for all generations to come. I thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Wood. Let me say that we have 23 people signed up to testify, so I'm not going to give everyone more than about 3 minutes apiece. If you have written testimony, you can submit it. And I want to tell you that you see my bill file. Everyone who submitted written testimony prior to the work group, I read every single piece of written testimony. In fact, that's where many of my questions came from. That's why I sent questions over to ODF&W and other state agencies to get more information, because you gave us that information. So please remember that. Senator Burdick, do you want to come up with your nephew, Sage?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Ginny Burdick, and I represent the people of Senate District 18 in Portland, which is far away from the Metolius River Basin, but never far away from my heart. Mary's son is my nephew, Sage. And Sage, did you have something you wanted to say?
Senator Burdick, could you move the microphone a little closer to him?
Sage, you need to give your name first.
Okay. My name is Sagewood Fox, and I would like to save the Metolius River because I catch frogs, big fish, grasshoppers, and everything else that a kid like me would like to catch. And it's a very sacred place to me because I love going there. And if it's developed, there will be thousands of people ruining it. And it is no fair because I may be only 9 years old, but I should have the authority to have what people who are about 40 years old or older had when they were a kid, just like me. And my grandfather's ashes are buried here, and it would not be sacred any longer because it would be just like a miniature city. And that makes nothing special because there's gas, houses, cars, and tons of people. It would be a very ugly place to live. The county government is doing nothing, simply nothing, to save the river. And it is very mean of the county government to do that, because they are listening to the people that would get the money. And of course, they would say, yes, let's build tons of houses because they get tons and tons of money. Metolius is one of the only places that I get my favorite food, like fish and wild strawberries. My baby brother Nicholas will be very disappointed also if the government lets the developers build all those houses, because Nicholas will not get to see what I saw and wish to see later, and he will be very disappointed. So I hope you can protect this beautiful place so that Nicholas and my children and grandchildren will experience what my mom and I have experienced.
Well, Sage, that was wonderful. You're going to have to be one of those old people to have children and grandchildren.
I know, that would take a long time.
That was wonderful testimony. Thank you. I'm sure you don't eat the fish out of the Metolius, though, because it's catch and release there,
and
isn't
it?
Yeah.
I try to catch them, but I never really caught them.
Well, you know, I've heard that that's one of the toughest rivers to fly fish in. So, you know, you're not alone.
Shoot just two.
Okay, good.
Madam Chair?
Yeah.
Just a quick question. Sage, are people that are 40 years old, are they old?
Kind of. Not really.
Well, you know, based on his superlative testimony and his adroit answer to my question, if your mom or your aunt hasn't taught you how to properly slide down the banisters in the rotunda, I'm your guy, buddy. I'm an expert.
All right, Senator Westland.
You're not that good at it.
Yes. That's right. Senator Burdick, did you have anything further?
I know better than to try to top that, Madam Chair. Thank you very much for the chance
okay.
to testify.
Thank you both. Thank you, Sage. Okay, so we'll start the timers. Let's see here. The people who are highlighted in yellow testified before, so you're going to go last. Let's just start at the top of my list here. Nunzi Gould. And if you don't know each other, you're about to know each other, so just shake hands. I'm going to call people three up at a time. Tom Landis and Doug Phillips. Okay, so we've got a timer here, and when 3 minutes goes off, we're going to pull the cane and cut you off. So who would like to go first?
I'm happy to go first.
Okay.
Good evening. My name is Nunzi Gould. I'm a Deschutes County resident, and I'm wondering if it's possible to put back up on the screen the image that was first displayed.
The map?
Yeah.
I had it in my hand.
The first one that was part of the dialogue.
Okay, and you can move the microphone a little closer so you don't have to lean over. There you go.
Thank you.
All right, Ms. Gould.
One of the issues that I think is very important to identify is the cross-county connectivity between where these parcels are located and where their impact may be, specifically on Deschutes County. The impacts of destination resorts are in the process of being felt, similarly to the impacts of Measure 37. I'd like to run down a little list of those because I'm not sure that you are familiar with those. Transportation. For example, Deschutes County and Crook County do not have transportation SDCs. They've been relying on timber payments, which have recently been axed. They're now trying to put a bill before the feds to get renewed funding to substitute for these loss of timber payments. That, unfortunately, is tied to the War Act. As you know, the president has vowed to veto it. So it's not looking good, as though monies is going to be coming to our communities to replace previous federal subsidies. That means that all of us current citizens get to pay or share in the abuse that is occurring as a result of new transportation that occurs as a result of destination resorts. And whilst it may take several years for these things to actually occur, there are substantial construction years that go into transportation infrastructure, construction infrastructure, et cetera, et cetera. Affordable housing. These are not things that are provided on site within destination resorts. They are relying on adjacent communities to fund these. Because of the real estate market in our Central Oregon market, that is very highly subsidized in order to make it affordable. We have 8,000 new affordable units that are required in our Tri-County area in the next few years. DEQ violations for septic. It took two DEQ violations for septic at the Eagle Crest Resort. That means that whilst you may believe that effluent is being used properly, it took violations as such, contamination of water, of our water, our existing waters, before DEQ actually stepped in. So I think it's very important to be understanding what the procedure is before we just say, hey, this is an environmental process because we're reusing wastewater. Water, if you look at the boundary of this map, yeah, if you look at where the Matolius River lies, the river itself was the boundary used for the USGS geologic study for the Deschutes Basin. Anything west of the Matolius River was not included in that study. We don't have that information.
Okay, Ms. Gould, your time is over, and I need to inform you that in all my research, the county, in their ordinance that they adopted when they mapped these resorts, they're actually the only county I've ever seen this done in, and actually that's what drew one of the inappropriate comments from the county commissioners, because when I asked about affordable housing, I thought they were putting money into affordable housing in the community. But their affordable housing is limited to resort management and staff. So they won't be going into the adjacent communities. That is a requirement of their ordinance that they adopted. That housing for resort management and staff shall be provided on-site, or the resort shall provide transportation for employees.
Right. For example, Black Butte Ranch, whilst it's not a destination resort, has a bus that goes from Black Butte Ranch to Redmond.
Okay.
This puts the pressure on the rest of the transportation system.
Right.
I'd like to just sum it up.
Well, your time's up. If somebody else doesn't get to speak.
I encourage you to pass the bill
okay.
as it stands without any of the amendments that you've just discussed today.
All right.
Thank you.
Next, we're going to try to set this alarm so it'll go off.
My name's Doug Phillips. I live in Camp Sherman. At least 25 years, and I would be in full support of Senator Westland's bill as it stands. And for many of the reasons that you heard the first person speak of, it's just a remarkable area. It really is a one of a kind sort of an area, and so far it's really remained quite pristine. In the way that's been managed, and with the huge Colson Resort, I mean the impact would just be tremendous, and the other resort over there would also impact it significantly. And you can really sort of do the Oregon thing and protect these lands and protect these resources and. Look forward for the next 50, 100 years and, looking back to what Oregon's done over the last 50 years. And really the thing to do is to protect these lands. Thank you.
Thank you. What we'll do is when you have a minute remaining, we'll hold up a finger. So
I'll transfer my time.
Okay. Well, no, we're not going to transfer time today, but thank you, Mr. Phillips. Yes, sir.
Tom Landis. I've resided in Camp Sherman for the last 18 years. Before my prepared remarks, I don't want to present you with this photograph that
you can put it on the document.
Somebody gave to me.
We can all see it.
I just want to read what it says first. It's a photograph of a sign that is hung outside the Camp Sherman store, which is the sort of main gathering area for people in Camp Sherman. And it's pretty poignant in relation to what we're talking about tonight. It says, "Protect and respect the Matolius Basin. The joys of nature and our dreams for the future live here." And at the bottom, it's signed by the students of Black Butte School. Black Butte School is a little two-room schoolhouse that is located in Camp Sherman. And I think that says a lot about kids, what they feel about the area, what they want in their future. And what Sage said sort of hit me, because he said a lot of what I want to say, because I've had a lot of experience with Jefferson County. I've documented that experience in testimony that I submitted to you in written form, so I won't go into all of it. Sage said, when it relates to the Metolius Basin, Jefferson County just doesn't do anything. Now, he's a kid, and you listen to his testimony and think, well, he's just a kid. It's poignant testimony, but what does he know? Because he hasn't had experience. Let me tell you, I've had 12 years of experience on the local advisory committee for Camp Sherman, 5 years as its chairman, and they don't do anything. They don't listen to us. They don't pay attention to what we feel are the desires of the community in general and of the people of Oregon. They've shown you already that their major motivations are getting more tax dollars, and that they don't really pay attention to the good of all Oregonians and to the outstandingly unique natural values of Camp Sherman. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Landis. A question by Senator Metzger.
Since you live in Camp Sherman, tell me, what's the population of Camp Sherman, roughly? Do you know?
It's hard to pin down. There's a lot of snowbirds. How many people are there in the summer, Doug, or in the winter, Doug?
It's 200 to 300, I would say.
That's my understanding, too, gentlemen.
And it expands to thousands in the summer.
Yeah, it expands way up in the summer.
Okay, I just want to ask one question of this, and because I think it's, you know, part of the overall discussion, and I appreciate your thoughts on this and passion for what is clearly an important resource. But I and either one of you can take a stab at this, but I want to know what your reaction is to the fact that I represent Hood River County. It's a beautiful area, Columbia River Gorge, Mount Hood, East Clackamas County, and there's a lot of things that are worth protecting, and I believe very strongly about. But I also, have the question that I ask people about, you know, are you only concerned about other people's impacts? I mean, you live in Camp Sherman, you have an impact on that area, and I think, you know, one of the counterpoints would be, you know, it's that kind of like, I've got mine, you can't have yours type of attitude. And I just want to have your reaction to that. I mean, there are impacts, yes, but why isn't, you know, we don't hear about, you know, your impacts or others, and I don't mean you personally, but since you, you know, represent that area, and always concerned about anybody else's impact to that particular area.
For myself, and I probably represent a lot of other people that live in Camp Sherman, we are not NIMBYs, you know. I'm not sitting up here testifying because I don't want this in my backyard. Most of us that live in Camp Sherman feel a responsibility to the land and to the sense of place. Yes, we live there, but our responsibility, we feel, is to more than just ourselves. We feel that since we live there, we have a better understanding than people that haven't been there or don't really understand the outstandingly unique natural values. And so we feel that we're crusaders, not for ourselves, but for all the people, the thousands of people that come down there in the summer to camp, and all the Oregonians who live in Portland and Hood River and wherever else that like to come to the Metolius and enjoy the things that we are lucky enough to experience all the time.
Thank you, Senator.
We are just incredibly fortunate to live where we live, and we all know it, and we all appreciate that. And
okay.
Yeah. Thank you. I didn't want to belabor it. I just wanted to ask a question. So I want to respect the chair's ability to get other people to testify.
Could I respond also, Senator?
Very, very briefly, please, ma'am.
Imagine if the Columbia River Gorge were not protected. This is a similar equation.
Well, I'm saying that that's a very interesting discussion in Columbia River Gorge as well. So thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. I was looking, trying to look up in all my material. I've read when this little schoolhouse was built. I think it was in 1914. Cute little place. And for those of you who want a history lesson, I learned from the Warm Springs tribe what Metolius means, and it means stinky river, because there were a lot of fish that came back to die on the river, and so that's what Metolius means. Okay, moving right along with that history lesson, we'll hear from Doug Hancock, Tom Wolfe, and Michael Graham. And if you don't know each other, introduce yourselves, make a new friend.
I'll go first. Chair Walker, members of the committee, thank you for having this hearing tonight. Before we get started, I have a document I'd like to put in the record. I don't have copies of it. It's a petition that was, we had an ad hoc meeting. And
well, first
my name
is
Doug Hancock. I'm a resident of Camp Sherman.
Thank you, sir.
We had an ad hoc meeting in Camp Sherman at the community hall a few weeks ago, and it was just an informational meeting about Senate Bill 30, and people that were there in support of the bill were asked if they wanted to sign a petition, and this is the petition and the people that signed it. We don't have a lot of people, but there's 40 or 50 signatures on it, so
okay.
I'd like to put that in the record.
Okay, Ms. Gravel can take that from you, and we'll enter that into the record and get copies to the committee.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
There are other voices tonight that will be more eloquent than mine that will speak in support of Senate Bill 30, why it's important to protect the Metolius Basin from uncontrolled development, and why it's important to protect that area for future generations, because ultimately that's what it's all about. But what I'd like to do is take a few moments just to place this legislation in the context of what I perceive to be a long history and tradition in Oregon of protecting natural resources and important lands. Oregon has been many times blessed, once at least, with its natural resources and unique areas, the Metolius Basin not the least withstanding. But also, Oregon has been blessed with political leaders on both sides of the aisle who have been courageous, independent, regardless of whether they're liberal, conservative, Democrat, Republican, who have recognized that Oregon is defined as much as anything by its natural resources and have sought to protect them. Oswald West, back in the early 1900s, broke with the rest of the nation and said that the coastal lands should be forever public. 60 years later, Tom McCall followed through with that legacy and pushed through legislation that made those lands forever dedicated to the public. Of course, Tom McCall also pushed through the bottle bill and cleaned up the Willamette River and so much more. Governor McCall in 1973, when he was speaking about land use issues, said, "There's a shameless threat in our environment and to the whole quality of our life, and that is the unfettered despoiling of our land. Coastal condominia, sagebrush subdivisions, and the ravenous rampage of suburbia in the Willamette Valley all threaten to mock Oregon's status as the environmental model of this nation."
So less than a minute.
Thank you. Now, over 30 years after Governor McCall uttered those words, there's another shameless threat in our environment to the Metolius Basin. It comes in the form of a county government that's lust for tax revenue, blinds it to the natural resources within its boundaries, and it comes in the form of developers whose desire to turn a profit blinds them to the necessity to protect those lands for future generations. I urge you to support Senate Bill 30, either with Senator Westphal's amendments for, or as it stands now. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Before I take the next witness, we're going to have to turn the lights up. We got a note that people who are watching on the Internet and on TV in the building cannot see what's going on. So we're turning the lights back on. So hello, everyone. Okay, sir, you are?
Chair Walker, committee members, my name is Tom Wolfe. I'm the chair of the Oregon Council of Trout Unlimited. I represent the 4,000 members of Trout Unlimited. in Oregon, and we are part of the 165,000 members nationwide, the largest cold water conservation group here in the United States. I come here to speak as a sixth-generation Oregonian, as a fisherman, and as a lover of the state. We urgently support Senate Bill 30, or if that can't be passed, the Dash 4 amendments. We do that for two different reasons. One, as in interest to protect the red band trout and the bull trout in the Metolius. The bull trout population in Metolius is the healthiest population of bull trout found in the lower 48. It is so healthy that they actually allow a fishery on it. And to go into those deep, deep pools in the Metolius to look down and see those giant trout cruising on the bottom, some of which get up to as much as 20 pounds, is an amazing sight, something that everyone should see. It's not the easiest place to fish. We refer to it among my friends as the most beautiful place in Oregon not to catch fish. And so we go down there not so much to catch fish, but to enjoy the idea and concept of catching fish, sometimes to catch fish. But it's a beautiful place. Trout Unlimited is currently in the middle part of a six-year plan to restore habitat along Lake Creek to help the Forest Service bring back sockeye salmon. In the current process, we will bring back sockeye, which used to run, was one of the only two places in the Oregon that sockeye was found, was on the Metolius and on Wallawa. And then, due to this current plan, management plan the Forest has, they will bring back sockeye salmon. And we're working hard to do that. So to build a resort in this area would have an enormous effect on the groundwater. It would, could suck up groundwater. It could cause enormous effect, and we think as an Oregonian, as fishermen, that the Metolius should be protected. It should not allow destination resorts within that area. And currently, Trout Unlimited also, since we're a conservation group, we're also a fisherman, we produced a book called 100 Best Trout Streams in the United States, and the Metolius is one of them. It is a place beloved not only by Oregonians, but by thousands of people that come here every year. It's a place that we should protect for posterity, and we need to keep that protected. I stayed as a fisherman, as an Oregonian, and as a lover of nature, protect the Metolius and support Senate Bill 30, pass it out of committee, and with the amendments, Dash 4, suggested by Senator Westland. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wolf.
Thank you, Chairman Walker. My name is Michael Graham. I live in Portland. 45 years ago, my wife and I transferred from Iowa to Portland, and I can tell you Iowa's a wonderful state, but there is nothing like the Metolius in the state of Iowa or anywhere in the Midwest. 31 years ago, we discovered the Metolius and have been going there every summer since this, since that time with our children and now with our grandchildren. I cannot possibly match Ms. Wood's eloquent testimony about why this very wonderful area and remarkably unique area should be maintained. I strongly support Senator Westland's bill unchanged, and I think it should go out of the committee this way. Finally, it's going to take a long time if this resort passes up on Green Ridge. It's going to take a long time to build this out, and I cannot imagine the effect of the trucks, of the paving trucks, the cement trucks, the lumber trucks, the roofers, all of these people back and forth through this tiny area. On the roads and the effect that that will have on this marvelous area. So I strongly urge you pass this bill out uncompromised without these amendments. Thank you.
Sir, let me ask you something before you step down. I've been to the property, and on the road going into Camp Sherman, you can get to the Dutch Pacific property that way on an old Forest Service road, but it also, you get to it off of Highway 20, what is
yes.
Highway?
Yes. Yes, you can.
Okay. And then the other property, the Ponderosa property, is over the ridge.
Yes.
So you would get that off of that, off of the highway as well.
Well.
So there wouldn't be, just hang on a second, I just want to finish my question. So there wouldn't be traffic through Camp Sherman itself, and that area as the building is constructed. Is that correct?
I would not assume there wouldn't be traffic through Camp Sherman. There's a fine highway coming right into Camp Sherman, and I would not assume that the truckers and the builders and the people who are going to develop that area will always go in through the, Indian Road, Indian Ford Road.
Well, maybe I didn't go that far, but I went down to the store.
Yes.
And drove around and did the loop and came back out.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why a construction traffic would do that loop and come back out. Is there another road off of that?
If
back
you go down
the store somewhere?
If you go down past the store, and not on the road that is right on the river, but there's another road that parallels that up over a hill, and there's a road that goes directly up onto the top of Green Ridge there.
I see. Okay.
Well, and that would be probably the most direct route to the new development.
Those would also, it would be my understanding, would be things that the county could establish in the construction phase, saying that you couldn't
mm-hmm.
do that.
I think you've already heard the cooperation that we have had from Jefferson County.
Yes, I've heard from the county. Thank you, sir. Okay. Let's see. I've got all of the page one. So Nancy doesn't want to testify. Madeline Landis, Pat Malone, and Lori Hancock.
Hi. Good evening. My name is Madeline Landis, and if I run out of time, I've been scratching my testimony quickly.
Okay.
I would like to say I do support Senator Westland's version of the bill. Thank you for having the second hearing. I've been a full-time resident in Camp Sherman for 18 years, contrary to what some of the developers may have implied, that if you've lived there less than 20 years, you shouldn't be taken as seriously as the old-timers who happen to have property there or only live there off and on. Actions speak louder than words, and I believe that being an active volunteer in our community in various capacities for almost two decades should give one at least equal ownership credentials. I consider myself a steward of the land and of the sense of place we all cherish so much. I also consider myself a representative of many residents of Camp Sherman, Sisters Bend, and beyond, who asked me to speak because they couldn't be here. Plenty has been said and will be said on the myriad technical reasons why it is imperative the Metolius River and lands in its watershed are worthy of permanent protection from resort development. So I will focus my comments on the no less important intangibles of the spiritual aspects of natural places. No money can or should be made in preserving them, but they certainly need a voice at this critical moment of far-reaching decision-making. As the pace and stresses of modern life seem to be ever increasing, the need for quiet, unspoiled natural beauty is also increasing. Not easily quantifiable is the need to rejuvenate one's spirit in unspoiled nature. Many, many people come to the Metolius for this reason, and I know this firsthand. I'm a non-denominational minister and have had a small business for 17 years called Wilderness Weddings. My husband and I were also llama packers and outfitter guides for 20 years in all the nearby wilderness areas. I'm intimately familiar with how designated wilderness differs from the lands in the Metolius Heritage Area. To the average person, the Metolius and its surrounding lands are practically wilderness. The basin is not pristine, but most people who don't live there feel like it is. I've heard this over and over from hundreds of people because I have been with them during some of the most meaningful moments of their lives, their weddings. I performed hundreds of small weddings in the basin, along the Metolius, and on its tributaries. Okay, I'll skip all the pretty stuff. Another vital element of the sense of place that is so important to so many is a sense of undeveloped open space and solitude. Two destination resorts flanking Camp Sherman threaten these values with the countless big and small changes that in the end will all add up to big negative cumulative impacts from basic overpopulation. People want to come and recreate in an area that is pristine and beautiful to them. Let it be, let's see. I'm not here because I'm trying to make money. That is not the issue for me. I mention it only because I hope it gives more credibility to my assertion that this area is worthy of much higher status than Jefferson County officials realize and deserves permanent protection from all large-scale developments. The Metolius area shouldn't need defending for any more reasons than its intrinsic value. But it's always been the essence of fights between development versus nature. In closing, I am here to defend the intangible wonders of the Metolius in the larger environment that one feels when there, but cannot be explained in words.
Okay.
The loss of these...
Ms. Landis, your time is up. I'm sorry.
I had the best line coming up.
All right. Give me your line.
The loss of these things cannot be explained in words, but like they say about pornography, you know it when you see it. Or in this case, you'll know when it's gone. There will be irrevocable changes that won't feed your soul when all the dust is settled. I respectfully urge you all to vote for SB 30 as it was originally written. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for marrying people on the Metolius. I'm sure you don't get rich doing that, but you do it because you care about it. I appreciate it. Okay, you must be Pat Malone.
Yes. Chair Walker and members of the committee, I'm Pat Malone, and I wish I lived in Camp Sherman, but I actually live in the Kings Valley area of Benton County. I'm here today in support of Senate Bill 30 with the Dash 4 amendment, substituting a basin for the three-mile limit. My father and grandfather were cattle and wheat ranchers in the Antelope area of Wasco County. They started coming to vacation in the Metolius River area over 100 years ago. It was a much-needed break after the hay season and before the wheat harvest. My brother and I grew up on stories of the river and the annual trek there. Part of my motivation for coming today is to represent those who came before me. The Metolius was special to them, and the current generation has a responsibility to take care of this unique area. I started going to Camp Sherman when I was a little kid in the 1950s. I remember hiking along the Metolius, the lush grass, the ponderosa pine, the spectacular colors of Wizard Falls, and the coldest water that I've ever been in. My wife and I took our kids to the Metolius many times as they were growing up, and I hope this tradition will continue when they have children. The Metolius is a very special place for my family, and it needs our stewardship so that Oregonians today and in the future can enjoy its wonders. I heard this saying, and it's not mine, but I don't know who did it, but we don't inherit the land from our parents, we borrow it from our children, and I think we need to keep that in mind. I wish that my words were more eloquent, but at least I was brief. Thank you for adding this hearing, and please pass Senate Bill 30 with the Dash 4 amendment.
Thank you, sir. Your words were very eloquent.
My name is Lori Hancock. I'm a resident of Camp Sherman, and I'm also the president of the Camp Sherman Historical Society. And I think the Metolius Basin is special and unique, and I believe it deserves protection that's offered by Senate Bill 30 as written, and could probably live with Senator Westland's amendments, but no one else's. But just because I think that, I guess I don't think that's enough. I'm not the first to believe this, and I provided you with this packet up here, and I just want to flip through it. The first thing in the packet is a quote from a representative of the Forest Service to the U.S. House of Representatives Subcommittee in 2004, and she says, "The Metolius is one of the most pristine and ecologically important rivers in the state of Oregon." And then just to remind you, the next page is a cite to the fact that the Metolius is a federal wild and scenic river. The next page is a state of Oregon cite referencing the Metolius as an Oregon state scenic waterway. And then I have... enclosed the description of the Metolius Conservation Area from the Deschutes National Forest Land and Resource Management Plan of 1990, and I highlighted a couple sentences there that I think describe why they chose to form a Metolius Conservation Area. They say, "The Metolius Basin is truly unique in the quality and diversity of its natural resource and spiritual values. For decades, people have found the Metolius to be a special place where they are relieved from the stresses of everyday life amidst a unique natural beauty that exists in few other places. Recognizing the special qualities of the Matolius and wishing to preserve its outstanding values for future generations, the Matolius Conservation Area is established in this plan. So I'm not the only one that believes this. And then finally, I've included for you a copy of the brochure that was distributed in 1971 when the headwaters were donated. And I want to direct you to the dedication on the back, which reads, this was the dedication at the time it was donated in 1971. This area, the nationally famous headwater springs of the Matolius River, is dedicated for the perpetual enjoyment of all people. This was made possible by Mr. and Mrs. Samuel S. Johnson, who donated the trail and viewpoint area and gave a scenic easement for the springs to the U.S. government. Persons involved with the transfer of this scenic spot to the people of the United States after almost 80 years of private ownership were men and women who had foresight and exhibited goodwill in the interest of the public.
Just about half a minute.
Okay. So I want to thank you for being people of foresight by considering this Senate Bill 30, and I hope you will exhibit goodwill in the interest of the public by moving this bill forward and out of committee for the full consideration by the representatives of all the people of the state of Oregon. Thank you. And if I have 2 seconds, I'd like to tell Senator Metzger how you live in Camp Sherman, which is you tread very lightly. We have gravel roads. We live in small houses. We don't pave things and build mansions. So, and we do have an elk herd that lives there in the winter, for the record.
Yes, you do. According to the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, it numbers about 200. It's just one herd. I think there are four herds. Senator Marsh has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Does the Deschutes National Forest Conservation Area include the land east of what is the ridge?
Green Ridge.
I don't believe it does, but the water basin does include that. So I think that's why it's being
But the forest plan the does not include that.
You'd have to ask someone else for sure.
Okay.
I can't
Thank you.
Answer that.
The folks who own that piece of property will be testifying, and so they can answer your questions. Any other questions? All right. Thank you. Thank you for testifying. Okay. I'll hear from Jeremiah Bauman, Charles Calica, I hope I did that right, and Nikki Killingsworth.
Madam Chair, while they're coming up, Mickey has not gotten me any of her mint candy lately, and so I think we ought to cut her testimony to a minute.
I know. I haven't had my cookies yet either.
Your carrots.
Oh, and my carrots.
Your baby carrots.
Thank you. Okay, Jeremiah, you're the speaker first. Go ahead.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Jeremiah Bauman with OSPIRG, the Oregon State Public Interest Research Group. I'll keep this very brief. I don't have to tell this committee that Oregon is a place of natural wonder. I'm a native Montanan, and until I moved to Oregon, I thought Montana was the most beautiful place on earth, and I've been forced repeatedly to call that into question, whether it's the Stack Rocks off of the coast or the amazing painted hills of the John Day fossil beds or the peaks of the Cascades. It's hard to travel around the state without being repeatedly stunned by the places you see and their natural beauty. With all those places in this state, the Matolius, I would argue, is an extraordinarily special place. And I've never been to a place like the head of the Matolius where the river literally emerges from the side of a hill on Black Butte, whereas you travel down that river repeatedly, small springs, small rivers emerge from hillsides and flow into that river in ways that I think would be hard to describe without using the word miraculous. The extraordinary clarity of the water, you can just experience it's in a special place being there. The second point I would make is that we don't know exactly what the effects of large-scale development are going to be. When you read some of the signs that have been put up to guide visitors to the area about how the geology works, how the underwater underground hydrology and aquifer works, you can tell there's a lot of unanswered questions. People don't exactly know where the water's coming from when it comes out of the side of a mountain. And I would think that those two things argue for two directions. The first, I think there's a clear path and a clear basis for this committee to make a policy decision on a statewide basis. This is a place of statewide significance, and it's fully appropriate for this legislature to decide to protect it. I think those things also argue strongly that the appropriate decision is to protect it, and so I'd urge this committee to protect the Metolius Basin and protect this unique treasure that I don't think exists anywhere else in this country. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rauman. Mr. Gallica?
Thank you, Honorable Chair Walker, Senate Committee members, and members of the public. I'm Charles Jody Kalika, Secretary of Treasury for the Confederated Tribes of the Western Reservation of Oregon. Thank you for the opportunity to express a more proper policy perspective from the Confederated Tribes of the Warm Springs Reservation. Too many liberties have been taken in interpreting our values, beliefs, and intentions to the point of being an affront or an insult to our dignity and integrity. For context for my comments on behalf of the tribes, starting first with sovereignty. Our people have exercised inherent sovereignty as nations on the Columbia Plateau for thousands of years, since time immemorial, a time that scientists estimate to be almost 40,000 years. Our sovereignty is permeated by the spiritual and the sacred, which are and always have been inseparable parts of our lives, for the Creator leads us in all aspects of our existence. Tichemni me singwit nami awat tamanwit. Pardon my nervousness. Which means, at the time of creation, the Creator placed us in this land, and He gave us the voice of this land, and that is our law. The Confederated Tribes shall always exercise our sacred national sovereignty in order to achieve the highest goals, to preserve our traditional cultural ways that have existed for so many centuries in harmony with our homeland, and to provide for the well-being of our people for the many generations that lie ahead. We shall, as we always have, live in balance with the land and never take more of our precious natural resources than can be sustained forever. We shall, as we always have, give respect to all persons, acknowledge the special wisdom of our elders and religious leaders, nurture the bright hopes for the future that reside within our young people, and accept full responsibility for all of our actions, as our basic religious teaching is that we are fully accountable to the Creator for our conduct. Hope you give me a little bit of lenience on the three-minute rule. Our people, as custodians of our sovereignty, refer all those things and declare that they should be protected absolutely and forever. The Creator gave us a lot of gifts. First, our spirituality, to understand and respect ourselves and our relationship with others, our relationship with the creations, both the living and the non-living and the spirit world. Of those gifts, there was first water, the giver of all life, followed next by the fish, then the wildlife, and the plants, the seasons, and He gave us special places. Those special places provide a quality of experience to a wide range of users for solitude, recreation, subsistence, and other things. Our goal is to protect the quality of that experience and not let one set of uses or users dominate, and not create private property rights to public resources. When this issue was presented to the tribes, the tribal council said, because we don't have any details, that it is our decision to err on the side of caution, protection, conservation for legal, environmental, and political reasons. And we'll look to this committee. There is a law there, common law, called the public trust doctrine, that says that there are resources out there that need to be protected for the use and enjoyment of future generations. And again, we'll look to this committee to uphold its sacred duty to honor that doctrine. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kalika. And I want to thank you for Mr. Bruno's participation in the work group and Mr. Mason, who represents your tribe here in the Capitol. They were extremely helpful.
Madam Chair and committee members, I'm Mickey Killingsworth from Jefferson County. When I first entered into my knowledge in the world of destination resorts, I spent three legislative sessions fighting called the Smith-Rocks Bill. And actually, Jefferson County Farm Bureau, we succeeded in protecting the integrity of the three-mile rule for high-value agriculture as defined under destination resort statute.
So I view this bill in that same light. And I haven't been over here, so I haven't heard all the testimony. And Jefferson County Farm Bureau was not part of the work group. So I did not come prepared to testify on 10 different amendments that sometimes are duplicate. But one thing I have not heard is fire. And for the last 5 years, the Matolis Basin, that whole area, there's been huge fire. Last year, in July. I mean, it was unreal. And when it's in Jefferson County, as a taxpayer, I know who helps bear the costs. And the Deschutes County citizens bear expense, too, because of the road in the state of Oregon. And I'm always concerned about fire. And when you're talking about this type of magnitude of development, you know, I'm sure in their plan somewhere they're going to have fire. But you're not going to have fire hydrants. You're not going to have fire trucks. They may have to have them on in-house. I don't know what you're going to do. It doesn't take a lot. I grew up in northeastern Oregon and the Hills Canyon area. So I know all about Eagle Cap Wilderness. And I know about fire. And I know how little it takes to make a massive fire quick. And I know 5 years ago when the feds were involved and everybody was being evacuated and everything. I know last year what happened. So I don't want to second guess the chair and Senator Westland for their work group efforts. I applaud you for doing that, and I applaud that you will figure out some solution. But I would like to hear that you address the fire issue. That is huge. Because when that happens and the wildlife gets displaced, agriculture, that's where they're going to go. Are they going to go over to the Warm Springs area? Anything that gets displaced has to go someplace, and the resources there can only manage what already they're managing. We're that fragile. And I'm not even going to go into the water because 3 minutes couldn't even get there on water. So
I have a feeling someone else is going to go into detail on that, Ms. Killingsworth. But let me ask you this question because I wasn't really clear. Do you support any kind of development as long as there's protection from fire, or do you not support development? Fire seems to be the issue. And I did fly over that area, and I saw the land that had been burned.
You know, my gut reaction would say keep it pure, but, you know, Senator Metzger talked about NIMBY. He didn't say NIMBY, but that's what you were talking about, NIMBY, not my backyard. You know, I have real concerns. I have a lot of concerns. And, you know, I didn't come prepared. I came prepared originally to support the original bill. And with all the amendments and listening to the testimony, I cannot tell you now what I would do. I hope you guys, I know you guys have the wisdom to look at all the avenues and make the decision. I just wanted to address my main concern is fire that I hadn't heard anybody talk about. And I do share the concerns as with the tribe. We work with the tribe on a lot of issues, and I have their concerns.
Okay.
I know that wasn't a good answer.
Well, it was. I got the gist.
Okay.
So, did anybody else have any questions of this panel? Thank you, Mr. Kalika, Mr. Bauman. I appreciate it. Okay. We are now down to people who were here before. Mr. Allen was not here before, but Jefferson County was represented. So I'm throwing him in that batch of people who testified before. So we will go back. I've got three more. I think I'll just keep going with the people who are opposed. I've got four, and then we'll hear at the end from those who want to develop. And so let's see here. Eric Kanzler, Paul Dewey, and Dick Kellogg. And then Mr. McLaren, I have you down too, but there's not enough room at the table. So we'll bring you up later.
Three of us, I think.
Shall I begin?
Sure. You have your 3 minutes.
Okay. Good evening, Senators. My name is Eric Kanzler, and I'm the Executive Director of Central Oregon Land Watch. And I am here to tell you about a site that we have created on the web. It's called noresorts.blogspot.com. The purpose of the site is to bank copies of letters sent to legislators in support of SB 30 and display them for everyone to see, along with helpful information, updates, and so forth. So far, in just over 72 hours, we've received 130 submissions, almost all of which are copies of letters sent to legislators. I think it's 121 to be precise, and still counting, actually. And I'm sure that this is only a fraction of all the letters that have been sent on this matter. I doubt that our site has captured nearly. There's probably quite a few remaining out there. These letters have been sent or copied to lawmakers over 500 times, including over 240 times to the members of this committee alone. In addition to the letters, we've received many beautiful images, personal stories, historical accounts, and even poems from places all over the country. The two most common places we've received letters from are, by far, Portland and Camp Sherman. The largest trends that we've seen are from the Willamette Valley and from Central Oregon, but really they've come in from everywhere. We have received letters from Seattle, Vancouver, Boise, the Bay Area, and all the way from Florida and Boston. We've even heard that the Metolius is big in Korea. Within Oregon, we have received letters from all over the state, from Yahats, Hood River, Selby Island, Maupin, Wasco County, Salem, Portland, Eugene, McMinnville, Lake Oswego, Hood River, Sisters, Bend, Redmond, Terrebonne, and of course, from Camp Sherman. We have received letters from Democrats and Republicans, from war vets, farmers, hunters, fishermen, doctors, lawyers, planners, developers, former public officials, 9-year-olds and 92-year-olds, fourth and fifth generation residents, as well as numerous longtime visitors and folks who just plain can't believe what Jefferson County is going to allow.
I'm sorry, I'm way over half a minute. My bad.
Okay. The common thread in all of these is a desire to keep resorts out of the Metolius and an unwavering support for an uncompromised Senate Bill 30. Their messages are personal, articulate, and passionate. Their memories are priceless. I'd strongly encourage you to visit the site if you haven't already at noresorts.blogspot.com. It'll paint a picture that I promise you won't forget. Thank you.
All right, thank you. I'm glad you repeated that website.
Sure.
Senator Wessling?
Madam Chair, if I may, I think this is probably a fairly common experience on this committee, but the number of letters I've received in support of Senate Bill 30 fill this notebook. The letters in opposition, all five of them, are in this folder. Thank you, Madam Chair.
You're welcome, Senator Wessling. Mr. Kellogg. Oh, Mr. Dewey wants to go first. Yeah. Welcome. It's nice to see you gentlemen again.
Thank you, Chair.
We got very close, didn't we?
Yeah, long hours. Chair Walker, members of the committee, my name is Paul Dewey. The last time I was in a campaign of this sort, it was called the Save the Metolius campaign in 1989 when we were fighting back Forest Service plans to greatly increase development in the Metolius Basin. I've given you a postcard from that era. Ray Atkinson let us use his famous photograph of the headwaters. I did want to mention, I feel like I'm here with ghosts, frankly. Becky Johnson, Tony Foster, Bill Edwards, Peter Hazell, Peggy Warren, Charles Warren. They were with me in 1989. They are not here now. Defense of the Metolius, and I've only been around 25 years with the Metolius, is passed down in generations. And what's so nice, Senator Metzger, about the community is that they really do see themselves as defenders for all the rest of us. I don't live there, but they have always been stalwarts about protecting the area, not for themselves. I think living there gives them a sense of responsibility that only comes when you live there day in and day out and sense the seasons and understand what it really means. It's a great community. It's not selfish in any way. I am very disturbed. I'm very familiar with this process, having been involved with Senator Walker's work group. I'm very disturbed by that number seven, the amendment number seven, and it's because it's about the water. Now, if you'll notice in that proposal, there's nothing mentioned about the water. This proposed 3,500 acres or 2,500 units, that's twice the size of Black Butte Ranch. They plan to use 10.4 CFS of water, equivalent to maybe what the city of Redmond, 30,000 people will use in an average day, these people will use. And the U.S. Geological Service, the survey, a hydrologist has said there is a direct connection that this groundwater withdrawal is going to affect the headwaters of the Metolius. Now, this is not something Jefferson County considered. And for those of you who have talked about process and wanting to defend Jefferson County, they missed this. It was not part of the process. And that's why it's so critical that we get legislation, because the springs, the water that everyone is talking about, is not protected. And under number seven, under amendment number seven, that's going to be fully compromised. And look at the USGS letter that's in the record. So I heartily endorse Senator Westland's proposal and his amendment. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dewey. And thank you for using the work group to raise money for your organization. I did see your letter.
That letter, Senator, is meant to pay for. We sent out an email, Senators, at the end, giving an update on the progress of this bill. And at the very end, we asked for contributions. We're a nonprofit. We're a 501c3. We've spent well over $1,000 in stamps and mailings. And so we're not profiting. We're not the developers here. We're not making hundreds of millions of dollars. We're trying to raise money to pay for stamps.
I understand that, Mr. Dewey, but as you know, I chastised almost everyone at some point in our work group, so that was just your little ding.
That was my turn, thank you.
It was your turn. Mr. Kellogg.
Yes. Chair Walker and committee members, my name is Dick Kellogg. I'm speaking today as a resident of Camp Sherman and as an architect and land planner by profession. You've heard technical arguments by both sides by well-meaning people. I would like to offer my personal non-technical assessment and comments. The Metolius River Basin is blessed with a unique natural beauty, pure flowing water, and rare tranquility. It is world-renowned and loved by all as a natural and recreational resource. It is subject to degradation on many levels from the impacts of human usage. I don't think anyone will disagree with this. People are naturally attracted to the Metolius River Basin. It is heavily promoted by tourism and recreational interests and is seeing ever-increasing usage. There is also the fact that the existing residential and lodging properties in the basin are not fully built out. These two factors alone create concerns for the basin's health. How much impact is too much? A tough question. However, once that line is crossed, we can never go back. The very qualities that attracted its users will be irreversibly affected. Jefferson County's stated purpose for lifting the restrictions on development is the potential tax revenue and economic growth. Protection of the basin was obviously not a significant factor in their decision. Counties have many options in addressing economic growth without sacrificing natural treasures in the process. Allowing destination resorts in these locations is simply short-sighted. The higher value is in the long run is the basin's protection. Regarding the Ponderosa land and cattle proposal, as outlined even in Amendment 7 on the screen there, let me just say that it is overwhelming in scope and scale, even as depicted there. As Paul pointed out, it's more than twice the size of Black Butte Ranch. As to the Lundgren proposal, one of the overarching philosophies of the state statute
allowing destination resorts is that they be reasonably self-contained so as not to impact surrounding lands. The Lundgren proposal asks that a third of the mandatory recreation facility expenditures be used for off-site enhancements in the surrounding forest. These enhancements would encourage the resort residents to use the surrounding forest, thereby creating increased impacts. Furthermore, the seemingly laudable eco-friendly promises by the proponents are really not relevant to the SB 30 debate. If the resort designation prevails, the properties could be sold at any time to less sensitive developers who would not be bound by the previous promises and who could build a standard prototypical resort. It should be noted that the Lundgren development alone would double the existing population of Camp Sherman.
Thank you, Mr. Kellogg. Let me correct you on one point. You were in the work group, and that was one of the proposals offered up by the Lundgren group, as you detail it here, that they would put money into facilities outside, into the environment outside.
Yes.
Well, that's not part of any one of these amendments here. They'd have to spend all their money with inside
the
resort.
That's
area.
Reassuring.
And so, I mean, that's, you can see that as either a good point or a bad point, depending on whether you think things need fixing up around there and some investment, or you can say they have to invest it all in the resort area.
I would like to address that, but I don't have time right now. I had a whole paragraph, but I've deleted that from my presentation, so let me move on if I could.
Well, actually, your 3 minutes are up, but I'll allow you to respond to my question. Which is not really a question, but I can do an make it a question and then give you some time to respond.
May I read my paragraph that addresses that?
I'll let you read your paragraph and then we're going to move on.
Okay. Furthermore, the seemingly laudable eco-friendly promises by... Did I read this before? I'm confused. Okay. Oh, here it is. I'm sorry. As to the Lundgren proposal, I don't personally believe that their vision of the future of the basin matches that of the general public. They envision structured recreational use and commercially funded care of the adjacent national forest. I believe the general public supports unstructured recreational use and care of the forest by the National Forest Service, with support from concerned citizens through groups like Friends of the Metolius.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned Friends of the Metolius, because, as you know, you folks are the ones that talked about getting an easement or some donation of land. It might have been Paul Dewey. But also, when you talked a moment ago about the Lundgren proposal, spending money outside the resort area, one of the reasons I didn't draft that up in the amendment is because I figured if the Lundgrens have money to spend outside the area, they can donate it to the Friends of the Metolius or another group, and they can do that work. So the money they're investing should be, according to the statute, in their resort. So just to let you know where my head was when I was drafting that amendment.
Sure. Thank
you. All right. Any other questions from the committee? Thank you, all three, very much. I appreciate your testimony. And I have Mr. McLaren. You will be our last speaker who stands likely in opposition to all of these proposals. And then we're going to go to the other folks.
Thank you.
Nice
Madam
to see
Chair,
you again.
Members of the committee, I'm Gregory McLaren, resident of Redmond, Oregon. I speak to you today as a citizen of the United States. We in America are sworn, all of us, although only immigrants really have to hold their hand up and put it on a Bible, we're sworn to uphold the Constitution. This is an especially immense moral imperative for all of you that sit on this committee, and your peers in the House and the Senate of Oregon, and your peers in the U.S. Congress. Article 1, and I'm not a constitutional lawyer, provides for citizen redress of citizen grievances and abuses of government. We have an abuse of government before you. Senate Bill 30 corrects that. for nearly 20 years and maybe longer, the citizens of Oregon and the residents of Camp Sherman have had to ask the Land Use Board of Appeals and the Court of Appeals to correct errors of Jefferson County Board of Commissioners, either errors of process or errors of substance regarding Oregon's land use laws, the implementing regulations, and even its own comprehensive plan and zoning ordinances, time and time and time again. This land we're talking about has been forest land for time immemorial. It has been industrial forest land for about 100 years. For the last 25 plus years, Jefferson County's comprehensive plan has maintained that, forbade subdivision of that land, and forbade any use unrelated to forestry operations. The two resort proponents bought those lands in the last 7 years when they knew that it was forest land and could not be subdivided or developed. But they went to the county commissioners and asked for a special dispensation. And we would say, I would say, that they are abusing Oregon State's land use statutes. But maybe they're not, according to legal law. They wanted to get on the dollar train, just like Crook and Deschutes County. That is why...
I'll let you finish that up.
Thank you. You as elected officials should use that moral imperative to correct the errors and abuses of Jefferson County in your oversight capacity under the U.S. Constitution and under the laws of Oregon. Please pass Senate Bill 30 and rectify those abuses and protect a heritage that only Jody Kalika and the members of his nation and peoples can speak to from a generational standpoint.
Thank you, Mr. McLaren.
Madam Chair.
Let me play devil's advocate with you just because I feel like doing that.
That's your prerogative.
When you talk about these folks, that it's an abuse of government, I'm assuming you're talking about the Jefferson County commissioners, and that this land has been forest land for time immemorial, and the developers bought the land as forest land, and it's abusing the land. It's private land. And they went to the Jefferson County Commission to have it zoned for destination resort. That's all legal within the statute for that
Correct.
To be done. And as you know, there are 22 appeals with LUBA right now based on the mapping that the county has done.
Correct.
But I'm at a loss to understand what they're doing is illegal because they've done everything legal, correct?
Oh, I grant you that.
Okay.
I'm talking about redress of grievances.
Okay.
Scores, maybe hundreds of people testified before the Board of Commissioners and the Jefferson County Planning Commission to say, leave it alone. It's okay the way it is. It doesn't need to be developed. And Madam Chair, may I offer a story?
Mm-hmm.
Using your rationale of everything's been done legal, we would not have a Hell's Canyon Preservation Area, a Hell's Canyon National Recreation Area, covering some 700,000 acres in both Oregon and Idaho. If it were not for the U.S. Congress and Oregon's former Senator Packwood and a number of other legislators, including the former Representative Al Holman, who saw an abuse going on that involved something that was bigger than just private property rights or a county's prerogative.
I know sometimes the voice of the people is pretty powerful, and you're right. You're right. But I just wanted to get it on the record that what was done here was legal. Was it right?
Well,
what we're objecting to.
I for the most part, acknowledged that they dotted their I's and crossed their T's?
Well, they may have. I have some dispute with the county commission as well, but, you know, and that's really what's on appeal is whether they did the mapping correctly and did all the studies. And we've had, members of this committee have not been in the work group, but we've had those comments, and there's been testimony, written testimony provided, that the county has not done a study on the game, the wildlife, at all in several years. Of course, we're going to hear from the county next because you're a nice segue into the county. But that's one of the issues that folks are very concerned about, is that they've mapped these resort areas without having done a study about the land and the wildlife and its impacts on water.
We think you're correct.
Okay.
And I'll close simply by saying that there are larger things at stake here than individual property rights.
Okay.
And a county's prerogative to make decisions.
All right. Thank you. Any questions from the committee? Thank you, Mr. McMyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I
appreciated your service on the work group. Mr. David Allen and Mr. Kalika, are you still in the room? Because I have a question for you, if you could come forward with Mr. Allen. I'll go ahead and ask my question while Mr. Allen is getting seated. Mr. Kalika, you testified that you didn't feel the county had ever listened to you, that you weren't part of some of the decisions they made. Maybe I'm expanding on that. But did you, sir, participate in the county's process of mapping these destination resorts? Was your tribal council consulted? And or were you allowed to testify or participate in any of the hearings on the issue?
No. We weren't given any kind of details. We weren't informed of any of these processes, and which kind of generally reflects, I guess, some of the relationship between the tribes and Jefferson County Commission.
Okay. So it sounds like there's some government-to-government issues there. And Mr. Bruno mentioned in one of our work groups that the game that travels up and down the basin travels into your reservation. Is that correct?
Correct. That's one of the concerns that we have, is the Metolius wintering deer herd goes as far as the airport to Grandview, as far east as, I believe, 12 miles west of Mount Washington, as far north on to the northern extremes of our reservation. So it's a very important area, and it's a very important connection between a number of different herds, and lends to the, in my mind, the genetic viability of our deer herds.
Okay.
And elk herds.
The other question I have is regarding Fly Creek. We heard testimony or conversation in our work group that Fly Creek had an endangered species of trout. I think it was red tail?
Red band.
I was close. It had a red band trout. And they also were experiencing low water flows. So that is one of the reasons that that area was sort of designated as a place where the one developer would donate land. Do you agree with that donation of land? Would you think that would be a good idea?
Well, I don't know that there's enough detail on what that contribution of land would, I guess, contribute.
Okay.
In relationship to the amount of water that would be potentially withdrawn overall because of both developments. So again, we'd have to take a very guarded position in terms of what the impacts would be between groundwater and surface water, and in relationship to the fisheries issues that we're trying to address in relationship to the Pelton Rombe project.
Okay. Any questions of Mr. Kalika before I release him back to his chair? All right. Thank you, sir, for coming up and answering the questions. Mr. Allen, welcome. Nice to see you again.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm David Allen. I'm the Jefferson County Council. I'd like to just respond, if I can, to one of the questions that was just asked with respect to the involvement of the tribes. It goes to part of my testimony. I do have written comments, and I won't belabor repeating those. The tribes were parties and did participate in the local process, and so there may have been problems with notice, and unfortunately I was not part of the process in 2006. But the table of contents shows several letters submitted by Ellen Grover of the law firm of Carnot Peterson, who represents the tribes. I would also note that the tribes are currently an appellant in the pending LUBA appeals. And if you're familiar with LUBA, if you have not appeared at the local proceeding, you do not have standing to appeal. So by the very definition of them being appellants, they were involved in the process. So I don't mean to beg a dispute there, and if there are notice requirements, I'm all ears and would love to improve those processes if there are problems.
Okay, and Mr. Allen, for the benefit of the committee who may not have yet met you, you have only been with the county a short period of time, correct?
Beginning in January of 2007, that's correct.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Chair. As I indicated, I have written comments, and I was prepared here to talk about the process. It was fairly well established here just a moment ago that Jefferson County followed the process that's been directed by state law and state statute. That matter remains to be seen. There are, as you mentioned, Chair Walker, a number of appeals at LUBA, and ultimately the process that's in place as we sit here tonight is a LUBA appeal with ultimate repose to the Court of Appeals and Supreme Court. There are procedures in place and processes in place to review what Jefferson County has done and to ensure that there has been compliance with the law. But rather than go through that, Senator Walker, Chair Walker has heard me talk about that, and I think that the point's been made well enough tonight. I'd like to talk specifically about the amendments, if I might. The Dash 7 and Dash 9 amendments, I believe, are the amendments that...
I'm going to let him go a little bit longer.
Thank you, Chair. Attempt to memorialize at least what were the beginnings of a negotiation in our work group that we had last week, the Marathon Work Group, as I refer to it. In any case, I did want to point out in the Dash 7 amendments, there is one particular clause that may provide problems for Jefferson County, and that appears in Section 2. It's on line 16.
Okay, can you hold on a second while we all grab our Dash 7? Okay, I have mine.
Mm-hmm.
We all have it now. Dash 7, the first page, line 16.
Page 1, line 16.
Okay.
Wherein it states that the governing body of Jefferson County shall condition issuance of necessary permits for constructing a destination resort. It's very well settled law that issuance of building permits, the sole criteria for issuance of a building permit is compliance with the building codes and the standards in the building codes. So Jefferson County would not be able to fulfill those duties as currently written because we would not be able to deny a building permit or a construction permit, as I interpret this clause, based on donations of any money or donations of any land. So there may be another better vehicle, and perhaps the House could move if the bill does move. Those could be addressed, but I did want to point out for the committee that that would be a potential problem for the county with respect to this permit.
So in other words, there's a better way of saying that than the way it's stated.
Well, it depends on what permits you're talking about. Certainly land use permits are dependent upon conditions, and you could make this a conditional use type of application. There are a number of ways, I suppose, that you could draft that. And I guess that kind of gets to my overarching concern here, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
The work group process with Chair Walker, I have to give high marks to Chair Walker. It was, despite some unpleasantness that's been publicized here of late, she was remarkably hardworking and professional. Senator Westland's participation was greatly appreciated. The participation of all the parties, quite frankly, I think it had the opportunity to be very ugly and very nasty, and from my perspective, it was never any of that. People were professional. There was progress made towards the middle, whether we got there or not. But fundamentally, the difficulty I had with the process was we were attempting to do a land use planning hearing within the confines and limitations of a work group in one evening with a chair that was falling through on her threats to not let us out of the building and who had gathered tons of evidence and tons of reports and had gone, quite frankly, the extra mile to get information for us to use in our deliberations. It's just no substitute for a local land use planning process. In my written comments, you'll note that the county, in total, at the end of all this, spent over 100 hours of public meeting time. That doesn't include staff time. That doesn't include internal conversations and work sessions that may not have been necessarily advertised. And over 4,000 pages of record. And there's just no way that a legislative process, I don't care how hardworking the members of the work group are, can substitute for that process. If the bill is to move forward, the amendment, the Dash 9 and Dash 7 amendments, Jefferson County would support, because we believe that they at least preserve some of the sanctity of the provisions of our original ordinances. And finally, I would ask the members of the committee, and I apologize for not bringing copies, to review Jefferson County's ordinances, both the comp plan ordinance and the zoning ordinance, with respect to destination resorts. I think you'll find that the county, it was a long, highly public, fully vetted process, and those findings are in the ordinances. At 40 pages each, at 20 copies required, I do have at least a little bit of environmental streak in me, and I didn't feel like walking in with a ring full of papers. So I'm open to any questions, and I thank the chair and the committee for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Allen. I actually have copies, the copies you provided me in the work group, and after we hear from everyone, we are going to take a short recess because I need to get out of this chair and take a break, and then we'll come back and go deep into work session. So if anyone on the committee would like to look at that, I'll pull them out.
Thank you.
Any questions of Mr. Allen?
No, Madam Chair, just a question. I know we were talking, if we assume you are considering the sevens, we are considering the conceptual. This is a little more.
It's a little more than a conceptual if we were to change those lines Mr. Allen just spoke about, lines 16 through 18.
And so I'm assuming we would, if we did these, we would move it with the intent on correction.
Absolutely.
In the other chamber.
Okay. Absolutely, and we're under timeline, okay. So we can make a small conceptual amendment, but not one of that size. But part of the reason for giving the break, too, and the recess is after everyone's heard all the testimony, they can go out and look at all these amendments and come back. Any other questions? Okay, Mr. Allen, thank you again for coming over, and I know it is your wedding anniversary. My best to you and your wife, and I'm sorry you're spending it with us.
I was in hot water last week, and I'm in hot water again. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, sorry you're having to spend it with us. Okay.
You know that feeling up here very well.
Yeah, we never get to see our family. Oops. Okay. I'm sorry. Does Senator Johnson would like to testify? All right.
I haven't told you that story yet.
And then we'll go to the two developers, if I could call them that.
I'll be very brief, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Betsy Johnson. I'm the state senator from District 16. My family has owned the land around the headwaters since 1904, and nearly 50 years ago, donated some of it to the United States Department of Agriculture, U.S. Forest Service, in order to protect it when they realized they couldn't do it alone. I didn't testify at length tonight because I've already spoken, and I've provided you with my written testimony. My purpose in coming forward tonight is to thank Senator Wesson for introducing this bill, to thank Senator Walker for her heroic attempts to deal with this bill and the courtesy that she's extended, to thank my other colleagues who have signed on to the bill, Senator Burdick, Senator Deckert, Senator Bates, Senator Walker herself, and President Courtney. I believe we're all coming to the same end on different paths, and that is to protect this fragile, serene, unique, and all-the-world place. Admittedly, emotions have run very high, and if I have annoyed or disrespected anyone in my unabashed advocacy for this bill, I apologize. There has been much testimony tonight, so I will simply confine my comments to thanking the committee for your deliberations and commending this precious place and this bill to your thoughtful consideration. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. We appreciate it.
Madam Chair.
Yeah, Senator Johnson, Senator Cruz has a question for you, if you don't mind.
Not a question, just to say, Senator Johnson, you're always a lady.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, let's hear from Hasina Squires and Shane Lundgren. And then after that, we'll hear from Rick Allen and Linda Swearingen, and that will wrap us up because that's all I have signed up to testify. I'm just getting late.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Good evening. My name is Hasina Squires, and I appear before you today on behalf of the Dutch Pacific Resources. With me today is Shane Lundgren, one of the co-owners of the 740-acre parcel of land that you saw put on the map. We're here today to testify in support of the Dash 7 amendments.
Is it 740
I'm sorry, 9, Dash 9. Dash
no,
9.
No, no, wait a minute. 740 acres? I thought it was
637.
You said 740.
It's roughly 640 in the way we characterize it in the Dash 9 amendments. So.
Okay. And I hope you found the mistake in the Dash 9. We did. Well, it's not a big mistake. It's just that the wrong statute was cited. And
the trick question.
And I'm trying to find my Dash 9 where I corrected it. Here we go. Yeah, on line 10, it should be, instead of the big D, it should be an E, as in Edward. So that would be another conceptual amendment.
Common mistake.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for pointing that out.
A big E?
A big E.
The Dash 9 amendments would allow Dutch Pacific Resources to proceed with a very small destination resort. The language, as you know, is very specific and only permits us to have no more than 200 individually owned units. Without the Dash 9 amendment to Senate Bill 30, we would not be able to proceed. Therefore, we support that proposal and are happy to answer any questions. We appreciated the work of the work group and brought several proposals forward and won't belabor those. I know that it's getting late and everybody on the committee has probably seen what our proposals were. This amendment would allow us to move forward.
And Ms. Squires, the reason I put that section in there about not having to conform with the statute that we just corrected there was because if you had 200 houses, how many overnight lodging units would you have to have? It's a 2-to-1, so you'd have to have 100, which is pretty large. So that's why we put that in there, so that you wouldn't have to do that ratio. Okay, Mr. Lundgren.
Good evening, Chair Walker. Shane
nice
Lundgren,
to see you again.
Camp Sherman, Oregon, resident. First of all, I just would like to tell my fellow Camp Shermanites and Oregonians that I really very much respect all the points of view and the dialogue we've had, because I think our hearts are all kind of in the same place. We feel very strongly about a very unique spot, and I guess we're trying to approach ideas as to how to preserve and offer sustainable funding for that unique spot going forward. So to be cast as a greedy developer isn't really appropriate, because we don't really have a whole bunch invested in this, and we're not being paid to do this. We're sort of trying to have a policy dialogue here. So I think we're talking more about policy than a specific site, and this site is quite unique in that the attributes of it lend itself to this opportunity, I think, very uniquely. And I guess one of the main takeaways I've had in the discussions I've had in the community, and we've had three community meetings where we've garnered, I think, a tremendous amount of interest and support, and a lot of people, they don't write in, but they certainly support the concept. And I think it's more of a sociological component that is challenging people's sensibilities here. And there's a lot of environmental dialogue, and I think my partner Jim Keene is sort of a Wikipedia. He's been very astute at addressing a lot of these issues, and I think you go through those as we get into the LUBA process and actually the siting. So those will all be addressed by credible science, and I think, you know, there's no doubt that those have to be addressed. But again, I think the issue is sociological, and I think there's going to be a debate on who gets to use this area and how they're going to use it, and I think that that's the bottom line. And as citizens, everybody has rights to certain areas, and I think what we're trying to do is elevate the educational component of how that area is interacted with. Is it the trash dropping and the mushroom picking and the unfettered use of unfunded forest lands, or is this a unique opportunity to position Oregon as, once again, eco-friendly, a leader in environmental and land use policy, and to propose something that's very different on a very small scale and introduce some new concepts and work with the community that we live in. So we're certainly not going to go out with our elbows and try and force this against the people's will. We want to work with people here. So, again, we thought we were negotiating in good faith in the workshops, and we kind of seem to be negotiating against ourselves. We keep coming down on our numbers and proposing new ideas, and it's always niet, so I feel
Anyway, that's all I have to say, and I thank you very much for all the work you've put into it. And I just wanted to make one compliment to Senator Johnson as well. I've been spending quite a bit of time, a fellow who's working for us on cleanup of the property, worked for her father for a number of years, and has a lot of great Sam Johnson stories. And, you know, whatever Sam said he would do was done, and the Johnsons have been that way throughout their history in Camp Sherman, and we have tremendous respect and want to continue working with them on all aspects of whatever happens in the Metolius Basin.
Thank you, Mr. London. Yeah. Any questions from the committee? Okay. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. I need Mr. David Allen to come up again because I have a question that came up when these folks were testifying. Almost.
Thank you, Chair Walker.
It's a procedural question because I, you know, we understood it in the work group, and I'm not sure that the committee has been presented with the same issue. The matter that's been appealed to LUPA is the mapping process that the county went through in your comprehensive plan, correct? Not only is your comprehensive plan being challenged, but also the mapping of the destination resorts, correct?
Madam Chair, if I might, mm-hmm. the county passed four ordinances right. all contemporaneously, and if I might, the first two ordinances updated their comprehensive plan. That's one. The second ordinance updated their zoning ordinance with respect to issues not related to destination resorts. Those two ordinances have been appealed at LUBA, and I don't believe are necessarily relevant to this committee's inquiry. The third ordinance amended the comprehensive plan as per destination resorts, and that would be the mapping process. So that has been appealed. The fourth ordinance was the zoning ordinance, which empowered Jefferson County to govern over destination resorts, how they would be sited, what criteria would be used, and things of that nature. That ordinance as well has been appealed. So it may be a long answer to a short question.
No, it's a good answer to probably a badly formed question. But the other information I wanted the committee to know is that if LUBA sends back the ordinances to the county because they found fault in the way they've done something, they've asked the county to go back and redo it, you have the opportunity to do that, and people have the opportunity to appeal again. And all this is running on a timeline, committee, and I could pull it out of my file, but there's a real strict timeline here for all this to take place. So the bottom line is eventually you could probably get buy-off on what you've done with regard to your mapping after you've made some correction, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Then here comes the $10,000 question. So once you do that, then you can site the resorts on those two mapped properties, correct? Because right now they're not sited there. They've only been mapped.
Correct. There may be I don't want to get into semantics,
well,
Madam Chair.
Please do.
The siting process would actually require a local land use application. A developer, a landowner, would need to come in to the planning department and file an application to be approved for a destination resort. And at that time, they would need to detail exactly the breadth and scope of their proposal. How many units? Where are the roads? Where are the sewers? It's a master planning process that would be engaged in. There would be a site development review process that would go through. So,
and the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife have to assist you. That's required. And you have to do all those studies. And it's also a public process.
It is a public process.
Another whole public process.
Correct. And the ordinances that are currently under appeal would guide the county commission, well, the planning commission, and then ultimately the county commission, if appealed, on that decision.
Okay.
And the criteria that are in that ordinance would govern.
Okay.
That's correct.
And so then my final question then is what we are attempting to do here, if we were to adopt any amendment, is basically to do the siting for you and tell you how it should be done, correct?
Correct. And quite honestly, with the -7 and the -9 amendments, we will still be required to go through all the other criteria that appear in our ordinance.
Correct.
So I don't see this as any kind of, if you meet only what's in the -7s, you get your destination resort. It's in addition to, not in place of, I believe is the intent at least.
Right. And that is included in there as well, that you still have to go through the planning.
Right.
And there still are appeals.
That's exactly right. Okay. Any questions that the committee would like to ask in light of my questions? Okay, thank you, Mr. Allen. All right, now we'll hear from the other Mr. Allen, Mr. Rick Allen and Linda Swearingen, and that will take us to a short recess, and the committee I really hope to get done by 8, but we will be done by 9. If that helps you.
Or not.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, and members of the committee. First, thank both Senator Westland and Senator Walker for the hard work and long hours. We were there late, and that process, you know, wasn't sure going into that how that would all work, and that worked out very well, and all the groups participated.
Mr. Allen, I think you stated who you are.
Oh, Rick Allen.
And working
for Ponderosa Land and Cattle Company. I live in Madras, Jefferson County, and also have a cabin at Camp Sherman.
Okay, thank you.
All the other stuff is on the record, and lots of water issues and things we talked about last time, and there'll be more in the next phase of the process that Dave Allen just mentioned. We support Amendment 7, and we opposed SB 30, but it's a give and take, and through this process and through the work group, and Brad Colson was present. You said bring the decision makers, so we brought Mr. Colson, and we were there for 6 hours, about, and he agrees with these. It's important to realize that donation. 1,500 acres of land, and we went and toured that last Monday, and I looked at it myself with Mr. Colson. It's a neat canyon, and I think that that's a great donation for the people of Oregon. And then, of course, the 24,000 acres, we went up and looked at the old-growth trees, the 20-inch and above that we saved. That's also a huge donation. It's about 15 million board feet of lumber. No one's ever done anything like it. But we're willing to do that to preserve all of that for Oregon and for the people. We don't like your number five, the $400,000. However,
you don't.
and it's really not the dollar amount. We don't
had to stick a dollar amount in here.
We don't like a dollar amount in here. You know, someone may say they'd like to manage the land just for the money, and they may not care about the land so much. I mean, if it could be managed for $200,000, you know, there's not a lot to do with the land. So from a philosophy standpoint, we do have trouble with that as a dollar amount specific in an Oregon statute. We'd like to reword that if possible, but maybe that could be done in the House. And we're willing to help with the endowment. We're willing to help to take care of that property because the point was raised, you get it donated and then they can't do anything with it because they don't have any money to maintain it. Mm-hmm. So we're sensitive to that. You don't know who you're giving it to. You don't know what it'll take or what's required, but you're putting $400,000 in there. So we'll live with this, and we appreciate your hard work, and we think it's a good compromise, and we will move forward, and we may try to work on that wording later, but just nothing you'd have to do tonight at this late hour.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Swearingen?
Senator Walker, my name is Linda Swearingen, and I reside in Redmond, Oregon, and represent Ponderosa. And I really do want to thank Senator Westland and Senator Johnson for all their hard work in trying to protect the Metolius Basin. And while it's been a contentious process at times, I really feel good about the end result, and I am happy, as well as Rick, to be able to announce that the Colsons are excited about the proposal that's being offered. I don't believe they think of it as extortion. I believe that they are committed to maintaining the integrity of the area, and they believe that the Metolius Basin is a special place as well. And so we're excited to support Amendment Number 7. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions from the committee? Senator Morse.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What is the value of 1,400 acres that you would be donating?
I don't know. Don't know that. I know the value of the timber is in excess of $10 million.
In that 1,400?
No, that's in the 24, the 20 inch and above. We've not valued that 1,400 acres. Senator Wesson may know timber stuff better. I don't know.
I don't know, but Mr. Allen, you indicated that's in a canyon.
Yes.
And Fly Creek is in the bottom of the canyon?
Yeah, I went and looked at it, and he wants to, it would be below the ponds, because the ponds are used, they have ponds in the
all the firefighting off in the distance. They come in there and they can dip their helicopters. And so it was below these ponds. And the exact boundaries will have to get worked out because, you know, you want to make sure you cover. And there's another little side creek that Brad and I looked at, and he said to include that probably. So that's why it's not a set number. We're willing to work with the Friends and the Forest Service and the tribe on exactly that. I don't know the value of that, but it certainly is worth a lot of money. There's some nice trees in there, and it's a pretty canyon.
Any follow-up questions, Senator Morris?
No, thank you.
Okay. Senator Westland?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think, like all of us that participated in those groups, and perhaps David Allen maybe summed it up best, or Shane, or all of us, I mean, we all went into those things, and you know, some trepidations, and there were certainly some very difficult moments. I look back on it, and I just wonder what we really hoped we could come up with, at least speaking from my standpoint, the original spirit and introduction of the bill. I think, as I indicated earlier, everyone conducted themselves in an honest fashion with a high degree of integrity and were very collaborative in their efforts. Mm-hmm. So I thank you for that, and thank you, Shane, just everyone involved. So, but my question is, we see an amendment up here. It's just a simple question. How did that amendment get up there? Who signed off on that? Who?
Which one are you speaking to?
Seven in particular.
The dash seven?
Well, fortunately, we had Brad Colson at the work group, and as you know, he participated and offered what he was willing to do. And Senator Walker asked that we submit a proposal, and so that was a proposal that the Colson family agreed with, other than the endowment for $400,000 in there. And so this was certainly their idea.
It's their idea, but my question is, how did that get there?
And what I'm really mean get there. How do we get to the number?
How do we get an amendment?
Senator Walker. Yeah. I had all of, you see Walker in parentheses. I had those amendments drafted because of the work group process. And those are the amendments that I had drafted based on what we had discussed in the work group.
Well, I don't object in any way having, amendments presented for consideration by the committee. But my concern is, and this is what I'm really trying to get at, it presents the impression, at least, that people signed off on that. Did anyone sign off on that?
Well, Senator Wesson, I'll speak to that. That's pretty much the proposal, other than the $400,000 that was offered up at the work group. And if you need to see my notes, I'll get my notes. But I felt that this committee deserved to see the product of our work group, and that's why those were drafted. Not that I'm supporting them all. I simply had them drafted for the committee's review.
No, I understand. I appreciate that. It's good that it's up there. Mm-hmm. I'm not objecting to the fact it's up there. But we do this work group, and all of a sudden here are these, you know, proposals. And I just don't want anyone to think that these were signed off on, or that these are a product of the work group.
I will state to the committee and to the people in this room and out on the internet that no one ever agreed to those terms as the work group. We didn't walk out of there with our hands together saying, this is what we want. This is what I put together based on the conversations in the work group, so that this committee would have something to work with besides just your bill. Because there was concern expressed by some members of this committee that your bill wasn't quite where they wanted to go. So I'm giving them options to look at.
No, that's absolutely fine.
That's where that comes from. I will state unequivocally that no one signed off on any of those proposals. They were just all offered up, and I gleaned the best that I could from those. And as you can see, they're unhappy with the $400,000 I threw in there, but that was my prerogative.
That's just what I wanted to make very clear, Madam Chair. Everyone came to the table in good faith and functionally did not come away with any agreements, but these are ideas that were proffered at the work group not agreed to.
Okay. Any other questions from the committee? Thank you.
We are thankful for $400,000 as opposed to the $750,000 that was offered.
Well, been the $750,000, and I, you know, that's why I said I split the baby. The courts often do that, and since I work in the courthouse, I thought I'd just invoke some of those principles. Okay. Committee, how long would you like for a short recess?
15 minutes.
July, either one. All right. We're going to take a 15-minute recess till just a little past 8:45. I must caution the committee that no more than two of you at one time can be together, because then you will constitute a quorum. And since we are in full committee, you cannot do that. So all of you, don't stray too far. We'll see you in about 15 minutes. It's 9:05. Hope all of you out in TV land are still with us. I appreciated the public comment, and I believe we had exhausted our list. And now I'm going to go into work session and recognize Senator Metzger.
Thank you, Chairman Walker. I move the -6 amendment to Senate Bill 30.
Senator Metzger moves the -6 amendment to Senate Bill 30, and you are going to be getting those right now. Ms. Bell?
Well, they're passing them out, and Senator Walker, I know you want to comment on this. I just think that one of the things that I thought was very interesting tonight in hearing was I really appreciate the work group that you did, and obviously did not participate in that, just hearing as it evolved and then the work tonight. And I think there was some really excellent movement that people really were trying to find a common ground in the area. And I think we need to respect that. And some creative things were offered. Although I think that at this point, that's a work in progress. It's not finished. And I think there are some strong values that have been clearly articulated that need to be protected. And so, anyway, I think this would be an approach right now, would be a good one. I think you can comment more expertly on some of that, but I think this might give us to a point where we can continue to have those discussions and move the bill forward for all the different parties to see if there can be an ultimate resolution that, if not holding hands, at least shoulders to shoulder.
Thank you, Senator Metzger. I appreciate that. I've been holding these -6 amendments back because I wanted to see what the conversation was and the testimony was today. And it's clear that we are not where we need to be yet on this bill. There were comments that the work group wasn't a long enough process, and I agree, even though we were in it for about 8 hours, it wasn't quite there. I believe that the 10 amendments we have to this bill are somewhat confusing for folks, and I want to keep this bill moving so that we can continue to work on it. I have every intention of continuing with the work group, since I now know more about fish and big game and timber than I ever needed to know, and destination resorts. But what this does is recognize the county still has their right to do what they are. The LUBA appeals are pending. This says that the county must look at all of these things before they can cite a resort. I think this keeps this bill moving as we see it tonight, and that would be my goal for this evening. Any comments from the committee? I know you just saw these.
I'm trying to find the original. Yes, problem. Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Whistling. Here's the original bill.
Do we have, trying to take a couple of deep breaths here. Literally. Do we have counsel here to explain these amendments?
No, it's 10 after 9.
Do we have someone of authority or knowledge that can tell the committee the difference between these amendments and existing land use law?
No, Senator, it's 10 after 9.
Well, I don't know how you can ask the committee to consider amendments proffered at 10 after 9 when we don't have appropriate legal counsel to explain to us the ramifications of these amendments and the difference, literally, in these amendments and Goal 8 citing processes.
I can tell you that these reflect Goal 8 and Goal 5. If you need a copy of those, I can provide them to you.
So am I then to understand that we are writing into Senate Bill 30 redundancy?
I don't believe it's redundancy.
Well, I mean, that's my fundamental question, and I would like someone of, you know, significant legal authority and understanding to tell me the difference between existing citing requirements and what these amendments do or do not reflect.
Well, I don't have counsel to do that, and as you know, we have to complete this process this evening. I can tell you that when I drafted these amendments, I reviewed Goal 8 and Goal 5.
Madam Chair?
Yes,
Senator. We do have legal counsel that has significant land use knowledge that may shed light on that question if it was appropriate to ask Mr. Pfeiffer.
Okay. Does anyone object? We're in work session. I guess it's my show.
Your show.
Mr. Pfeiffer, would you like to come and discuss these?
Steve Pfeiffer. Thank you, Madam Chair. Steve Pfeiffer for the record. I'm an attorney with the Office of Perkins Coie, and I've been representing that specific in this particular matter, just for disclosure. I do have, as Senator Morris points out, some background in this. I was a member of LCDC for 6 years and chaired it for the last few I was on there, and I also chaired the subcommittee beginning in 1995 and concluding in 1997, where we took on Goal 5 and rewrote it as an administrative rule, and we spent 2 years working with all the interest groups to do so, and that led me to spend more time with it than I might have even liked. Having seen this for the first time a few minutes ago, my own sense, if that's what you're interested in, of what this does, I think, and anybody is free to suggest otherwise, I think what you've accomplished here is, as Chair Walker points out, you have incorporated in the statute as a requirement for the siting of any destination resort within the geography that's depicted here, and I don't think it changes from the original SB 30 map, the test that's established statewide by Statewide Planning Goal 5. And for those of in the audience or otherwise, Statewide Planning Goal 5 is one of the 19 statewide planning goals. This one addresses natural resources, scenic views and vistas. It has 12 subjects in it, ranging from aggregate to scenic to significant habitat and the like. You've captured what I think are probably the relevant ones here of the 12. Counties are told to go out, as long as cities over the with the initial acknowledgement of their plan, inventory those resources, determine those on a map-by-map basis, which are significant, and adopt measures to protect those that are deemed significant. And then they are then told to live by those mapping requirements in the land use decisions. And then this is where you've created a new approach. Those maps, generally by Lubin Court of Appeals case law, remain in place as a matter of certainty to all parties until such time as the county is told to modify their mapping and Goal 5 inventories during periodic review, a process in the state whereby statute cities and counties are required to come back every 7 to 9 years and revisit the issue. One of the issues, and I wasn't involved in the proceedings before the county, but I've learned from reading the record on appeal to LUBA in this case, that one of the issues that's present in this case, and frankly it's not unique to Jefferson County, is the inventories that were relied upon by the county in adopting the destination resort map in this area were outdated, or are outdated. In other words, they've only been amended a few times in the last many years, and I think the last serious amendment was in 95, David Allen told us, and we updated the significant fish and wildlife and probably the scenic and maybe a couple of others. Many other counties and cities have fallen way behind, in all honesty, in my opinion, on their mapping because there's a lot to do in this state, particularly with regard to land use, and not much money to do it. The argument at Lubin, short, will be, on those appeals, whether the county was entitled to rely and appropriately did rely upon older inventories, which may or may not reflect the current status of the on the land of these six resources and others. In short, what I think you've done here in my first read is you have kind of put that argument on hold, at least in the context of the statute, and how it relates to the appeals is a different issue. And you have told the county in this case that there is a new legislative direction that may or may not be applicable elsewhere in the state that says, at least for the purposes of destination resorts in this geographic area, we're going to elevate the substantive Goal 5 requirements for these six resources to the moment that a master plan is on the table for a resort, and you're going to address those now based on what's on the ground today, not what may have been mapped 15 or 10 years ago. And you're essentially, as I read it, requiring that Goal 5, imposing that Goal 5 requirement in the destination resort process, whereas otherwise it would have simply been something that they could rely upon, as Jefferson County and other counties have done, based on their historical mapping. You forced the mapping to become current, as I read it.
And you're exactly right, Mr. Pfeiffer, because that was the testimony, or at least the conversation in the work group, and I was pretty alarmed by the fact that the county had not done their work. Their answer to me and to all of us in the work group was they didn't have the money to do it, and if you know of a pot of money, you let us know. Well, that's when I found out that the Department of Fish and Wildlife does that, and they provide all that work for free, and the county just hadn't done it. So I don't think we're they've done their due diligence. I don't think that we've been able to do our due diligence here. There are some problems with these amendments, as has been reiterated to us tonight by Mr. Allen with the Dash 7, and I just think that we need to keep this conversation going, and that's why I brought out the Dash 6 to at least move us forward. And we're going to stand at ease for just a moment. Question?
Yes, I do, Madam Chair. Thank you. If Mr. Pfeiffer could come back to the witness table, please. The language on line 6, there's the reference to significant adverse impact. Is that language that is customary or, in fact, in land use statutes that would address the normal process that we're going through?
Chair Walker, Senator Morris, that was one of the first thoughts I had in looking at that. That is a term which is used to some extent in the statutes, but it's been adopted locally by many cities and counties in their local land use ordinances. Sometimes it applies to PUD, sometimes it applies to this or that. The point is, that's a term which is very well known to the appellate courts because LUBA deals with it constantly, the Court of Appeals deals with it constantly, the question comes up on what it means. It's in the statute to some extent. The point really I'd make here is use of that term will capture, for better or for worse, in all honesty, a long line of cases where that term was used perhaps in different or many different contexts. And if you choose to use it, the good news is it won't be a first impression opinion when and if that term is reviewed by an appellate court or, frankly, by Jefferson County Commission. They have the benefit, through the use of this term, to have some guidance in the form of what others have thought that term has meant over the years.
And Mr. Pfeiffer and Senator Morse, you've hit exactly on why I put that in the statute, because in this amendment, because there are so many folks who believe this is a very sacred place, and if you want my opinion, I just don't think the county commissioners have done their due diligence on that. They might disagree, but clearly the answer by one county commissioner who refused to issue an apology to me said I didn't know what was going on over there and I must not know that they need the money. So when I argued with one county commissioner that you've made it clear that you need the money, he says, oh, no, we're not a cash-poor county. We don't need the money. But I said that's what your argument was in front of this committee, was that you needed the money. So for me, after sitting through all those work groups and listening to folks and reading all these letters, it was obvious the county had not done their homework on these inventories for wildlife and water, the hydrology inventory. Mr. McLaren's very clear about that, and Mr. Dewey's mentioned it. Others have mentioned it. The tribe has mentioned the issue with wildlife and water. So that's why I put significant adverse impact in there, and being a person of the court, as a court reporter for 24 years, I was well familiar that that was a very, very well-established term of art in the law.
If I could volunteer an observation on that, you have two subjective terms in this test. The term significant adverse impact. Adverse is a bit subjective, but we can all pretty much agree on something adverse or not. But significant becomes a term of art, which will be subject to interpretation by everybody differently. Significant fish and wildlife areas shows up again. The only point I guess I would make, just for benefit of the committee's kind of sense, those terms will have to be interpreted by the county as they review a project in terms of whether this test is met. All parties, as David pointed out, will get their chance to come forward and say what they believe on both those points. Whether the resources present in the basin affected by this site are significant, and whether the impact, if any, is significant in and of itself, even if they are a significant resource. The county will be faced with conflicting testimony, obviously. They'll be faced, I guarantee you from experience, with conflicting science. There'll be five experts on every point saying five different things. That's the way the system works, and that's fine. It's the way it should work. But at the end of the day, what will happen is whatever choice that county commission makes in the course of approving or denying a resort will have to be based on substantial evidence in the record. They'll have to document the conclusion. They'll have to document the evidence they relied upon and where it's conflicting. They have to document why they chose the expert evidence that they did choose. And that will be their test if challenged on appeal. So that's the system I think I see you've set up here, and that's just, again, as an offering, what I think how this would play out on the ground.
There was also, Mr. Pfeiffer and members of the committee, there was also a discussion about perhaps sunsetting, you know, doing no resort siting and sunsetting it for a period of time so the county can do their inventories. I felt this was a better approach to do it this way. There are two chambers in this building, and, you know, if people don't like this idea, we can always change it in the House. But I think this gets us where we need to be this evening. Mr. Dewey, what is it that you would like to say?
Thank you. You're an attorney here. Could I be requested?
You are an attorney also. I will allow you to come forward and speak, and I'm not going to open this back up.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair. Senators, I just wanted to point out that Goal 5 already applies here. In Goal 5, the county has to make a finding that Goal 5 resources are protected. And they've already done that and found that they're adequately protected. What you're adding today is another Goal 5 iteration, but you're setting a higher standard. You're saying that the county has to find that these resorts will significantly impact a resource. That's a pretty tough standard to have to. I mean, right now the current Goal 5 says you have to show that it will not. You have to protect a Goal 5 resource. This standard is looser from our perspective than Goal 5, and so I understand why they would be supporting it. I mean, this is weaker than what Goal 5 already provides. And in that process that Steve was describing of the county looking at the evidence, they're given incredible deference by the Land Use Board of Appeals. If they want to pick a particular expert to believe, you know, they'll do so. And what this current process has shown is that they choose to believe what allows the destination resorts to go forward. That's why we're here, and that's why I thought Senate Bill 30 was being introduced. So this doesn't add protection. It is less protection than Goal 5 already provides.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Dewey, there's two lawyers with two different opinions. Not a surprise. Senator Morris.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a difficult issue. The dilemma for me is in this venue to make judgments about issues upon which we have had no, very little information, most notably the hydrology. We've had letters, we've had, but it has not been explored, and nor should this be the venue to do that. We set the policy and local government carries out that policy. The issue of the Metolius and preserving it and Senator Johnson's interest and Senator Westland's interest is valid. That is a very special place. The issue of hydrology and how additional drawdown of the water table would affect those springs is a very critical issue that needs to be addressed. I just don't feel comfortable in this forum addressing it and making an arbitrary assumption that something that's not even, by line of sight, it's completely over a ridge, that activity would impair this beautiful, pristine valley that we see. I think that's pretty well protected. The issue is the hydrology and that connection. So, Madam Chair, I would support the Dash 6 amendments.
Okay. Senator Cruz?
Madam Chair.
Senator
Wilson,
excuse me.
Go ahead.
While he's contemplating, Madam Chair, mm-hmm. may I?
Yes.
Obviously, your show. The find it not surprising that two counsel from different sides of this issue come up with differing opinions. Doesn't mean they're not speaking truthfully or sincerely. But what it does mean is it is incredibly premature for this committee to consider amendments to a bill in a very few moments that can have an everlasting impact on a timeless river. It seems inconceivable to me. That's why I ask for counsel and their analysis so we can have the legislature's, not the proponents or the opponents, attorney opine opinion. For us to act responsibly tonight, there is only one option, and that is to have the opinion of our attorneys so we can make a reasoned and rationed, not rushed, judgment.
Senator Westland, do you have a cell phone number of a legislative counsel?
You're the chair, madam.
I don't.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Metzger.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I respect Senator Westland's comments, and I think that it is, having dealt this afternoon with subprime lending, real ID, robocalls, and a lot of things that have a lot of answers still to do, or land use, it's not inconsequential that, next door the hearing was going and passing out a fixed measure 37. There is a lot of issues that this body needs to continue to address. I think where I'm coming down at this point on this, and I really, really appreciate your leadership on this issue, and have been torn on the process of this issue, because I share the sentiment of Senator Johnson, Senator Westland, and others in this room, but also making sure that we respect the process of land use in Oregon. And what I think is really critical is that this is not a final word, obviously. We have set certain restrictions on ourselves in terms of timing. And when you get into those restrictions, which we have with this final meeting of Senate bills, with Senate Bill 30 before us, I think the real important question to ask is, does this, the issue presented by Senate Bill 30 have merit that we need to pursue? And if it does, then it's incumbent on us to move that debate further in this process, keeping in mind that, as you have mentioned, that your intention that this work group is going to continue, that this will not be a final product, but it represents the fact that this issue is significant enough that it needs to move forward down the line. I think this is what you have done with this amendment. I'm not an attorney, but I am aware of the fact that I think Mr. Pfeiffer is right. What you have done is you have elevated and contemporized the approach to our land use goals with this, which makes it contemporary, makes it more of a requirement for contemporary analysis. And as it goes through the House of Representatives, there is going to be additional discussion on this. And I think this is a good starting point for that. As you know, I have been, you know, uncertain about this bill. I think this is the right approach, and I would support it.
Thank you, Senator Metzger. I would intend as reconvening the work group involving members of the House, because the other chamber is a very important part of this. So I would choose someone from the House to participate, because if we can move this bill forward, we will need their assistance and guidance as well. Senator Cruz?
I too, Madam Chair, thank you. Conflicted on this. I've had some real issues from the beginning on interceding in an ongoing process.
I know you have.
And I'm looking at the fact base that you have put in the dash six, and I would assume, and I don't actually know, that the finding of fact you're asking for there has probably significantly been done in the process to date, and if indeed some of it may be outdated, may be true, but that's the finding of fact that LUBA will be ruling on. And if LUBA finds that the facts are not up to date, would not they remand based on that fact, those findings? And I understand where you're trying to get and the fact that you want to move the bill, but I mean, this almost seems like a duplication of a process that has already been accomplished and now is under appeal at LUBA. And so my comfort level there isn't very high.
Okay. Well, we have the dash sixes on the table. Any further discussion? I think we've tried to respect the rights of private landowners, as well as to respect the rights of people who enjoy this environment and this space and what it has to offer. And this will keep us moving in that direction. Ms. Gravel, would you call
Madam
the roll,
Chair.
Please?
I'd just like to make a few comments. You know, colleagues, every day when we sit at our desks on the floor of the Oregon State Senate, there are on those desks engraved in brass the names of 22 senators that came before us. Run your finger down those plaques, line after line, desk after desk. You've got to look at more than several to find a name of even vague familiarity. Like us, they labored long, mostly thankless hours in profiled anonymity to keep Oregon, Oregon. They passed or helped pass incredible visionary legislation. The Mount Hood Wilderness Act, the Hell's Canyon National Recreation Area, the Bottlefill, the Columbia River Gorge Scenic Act, and in 1969, the Oregon Beach Bill. You can almost see Mr. Hay, the owner of the Beach Hotel. Paul Williams spoke of ghosts in the room. You can almost see Mr. Hay at that witness stand pleading his case to be able to build a wall down his property line on the Oregon State beach he owned to make it private. Those legislators made tough, difficult, controversial decisions that at the time, I'm sure, were second-guessed, questioned. What's important is that today, no one questions those decisions because they help keep Oregon, Oregon.
Thank you, Senator Westman.
Madam Chair.
Completed.
You know, in our land use laws, we prohibit siting a destination resort 3 miles from farmland. I mean, for God's sakes, for our children's sake, for Sage's children's sake, shouldn't we prohibit a destination resort within 5 miles of the Metolius headwaters, one of the most pristine and ecologically significant rivers in America? Jody had perhaps the best words of the evening, ones I hope we would consider and take to heart before we rush to this vote. Our Creator gave us the voice of this land, and that is our law. I would humbly, very humbly, ask that we reconsider this vote and make truly protecting the Metolius River and its basin the law of Oregon's land.
Thank you, Senator Wesson. We truly appreciate your commitment to the Metolius Basin and our environment and all that makes Oregon, Oregon. Ms. Gravel, please take the roll.
Aye.
Senator Moore?
Aye.
Senator Wesson?
No.
Vice Chair Cruz?
No.
Aye. The dash 6 is approved. Senator Metzger.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 30 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendations.
Oh, one moment. We have the dash 3.
Oh, yes. Madam Chair, I stand corrected. I move the dash 3 amendment to Senate Bill 30.
Okay. Senator Metzger moves the dash 3 amendments to Senate Bill 30. Colleagues, as a reminder, because there are so many amendments here, the dash 3 simply tells Jefferson County that they can amend their map and their comprehensive plan because we're asking them likely to do so. And they don't have to wait the requisite time period required in the statute. Any objection to the dash 3s? So ordered.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 30 as duly amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Senator Metzger moves Senate Bill 30 as amended to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation. Any final comments?
Yes.
Okay.
Colleagues, we are about to vote on a bill for which we do not have adequate advice from the attorneys that we employ and so ably service. I cannot believe on an issue as important and certainly impassioned as this, that we are about to rush to justice on amendments that were proffered at, I believe it was 9:05. These weren't rushed just down from legal counsel. But we obviously had the ability and the time with proper notice to find out what they truly mean. We weren't afforded that privilege. So I cannot help, in good conscience, but be a no.
Thank you, Senator Wesson. Your no is noted. I would also note for the record that legal counsel has not been here all evening for any of the amendments that we addressed, and many of you saw those for the first time tonight when you arrived at your desk. Any other comments? Hearing none, Ms. Gravel, please take the roll.
Aye.
Senator Morris?
Aye.
Senator Wesley?
No.
Vice Chair Freeman?
No.
Chair Walker? Aye. Senate Bill 30, as amended, goes to the floor of the Senate, and I will carry this. Thank you very much. Committee, I appreciate your indulgence. Members of the public, I appreciate you've made the trek all the way over here. It has been a long night. We are adjourned.